Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and Joe Show. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schulteis.
Hello, this is Joe Milligan, and I'm joined once again by Coach K. Ken Schulteis. Coach, how you doing today?
Well, I'm doing pretty well on this Final Four college basketball weekend. You seem a little frazzled, Joe, and I think it's because you've had some technical issues to get going in the show, and you just seem a little frazzled. In fact, you're ready to call yourself Coach K, which is either a compliment. It's either a compliment to you or questionable for me. I don't know.
All I know is I scrambled for the last 10 minutes with the good people at Blog Talk Radio to get us on. And, boy, we were getting ready to go on. All of a sudden, boom, we were gone. And then I tried to get back on. They said no scheduled show. So I had to call them up and get us on and so people could enjoy yet another edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. As you said, we do have a lot to talk about. We've got, Final Four, Major League Baseball started, got Kyle Nedry coming on the show. I mean, a big show planned once again.
Yeah, Kyle Nedry, who is the Indy Star beat writer for the high schools, he does a great job and is just constantly working and putting things together, whether it's for Mr. Basketball articles or our Super All-Star team, which we're going to talk a little bit about. And it is a Indy area-focused team, but can't wait to talk to Kyle a little bit. And, Joe, we've also got so many things that we won't probably be able to get to or get in depth with the way we would like. We do want to remind people that if they want to call in with a comment or a question, they can call 773-897-6325 to talk to me or to talk to Joe or just to make a comment or talk about a topic. They can also text Coach K at 812-480-9449. Text Coach K at 812-480-9449, and they can text Joe. Joe, can they text you today or not?
Seeing how I had to use my phone to get on today, I'd rather than just text you because I don't want to take the chance of getting cut off yet again. So let's just stick with the Coach K text today.
Yeah, the one thing I can tell them is if they do text us, we are not like ESPN. We are not like the Mike and Mike show and only put on the Twitters that agree with us. We will let people know what's going on, and probably one of before we move on in the show, Joe, we probably ought to jump into what everybody's. I don't know if everybody's talking about it. I know ESPN is talking about it, and that's the situation at Rutgers. And Joe, honestly, you and I haven't talked about it, so we may stand in total opposite sides. We may be similar. I'm not sure, but I probably would not be the guy that would be invited to ESPN, especially by Mike Greenberg or Stephen A. Smith, who have piled on. It's kind of interesting that during this season of Easter, Mike Greenberg, I still like listening to the Mike and Mike show, Joe, but Mike Greenberg, when he first started out, he realized that he truly was just a fan that didn't understand anything about coaching, playing, running a team or anything like that. He was just a fan, and that was the great thing. He gave the perspective of the fan. But in the last year or so, he must be getting great power at ESPN because he now uses his position as a bully pulpit. And in this season of Easter where mercy is always talked about, he's standing there with the rest of the group yelling, crucify, crucify, crucify. And, of course, we're talking about the Rutgers basketball coach, Mike Rice, who a videotape came out showing some scenes in practice, which truly were probably, I mean, there's no doubt about it. Some of them really crossed the line. Some of them didn't bother me. The language, you know, it was funny. Some of the East Coast guys weren't bothered by the language. I was really bothered by the language. But some of the East Coast guys aren't bothered by the language. But they've been piling on, and I think it's because the AD didn't bring the coach on to Outside the Lines ESPN program, and the AD wasn't as forthcoming to ESPN as they wanted him to be, so they put an agenda out against Rutgers, the basketball coach, and the AD, and now they're going after the president. And it's just funny how ESPN has now become a bully pulpit like NBC or CBS, and we start – I think everybody watched ESPN in the beginning because it was fun and it was positive and it was about sports, and now they become like the networks and everything's negative and downtrodden. So I think that Greenberg has gone way past where he needed to go. I think Stephen A. Smith is exactly what Stephen A. Smith is. He just tries to hype everything and so people listen to him. But I have sent Joe numerous tweets to both Greeny, as they call him, First Take to Stephen A. Smith, and it's clear to me that unless you agree with them or you are ultra famous, your tweet is not going to get read. And I just challenged them not on whether Rutgers coach was right or wrong, because he wasn't right, he was wrong, but just challenged them on some other things, and they did not read any of my tweets, and there were numerous ones, and I just found it interesting. One thing they did do is they did read a tweet by Chipper Jones, because he's famous, and he did not necessarily buy a lot of what they were saying. So I don't know where you stand on it, Joe. I just think it's gone way, way past what it needed to. They've gotten their heads. They've gotten people fired. They've embarrassed the university. They've embarrassed people and their families. It's interesting. No player ever came out and asked for justice, but Mike Greenberg did.
Well, you know, my opinion is basically yours. You know, the language kind of bothered me a little bit. But other than that, I mean, You know, I hate to be political here, but, you know, we all live in an Obama world where everyone gets the trophy and everyone has to feel good at the end of the day. And, you know, life isn't like that. And I'm kind of hard on my kids, you know. I think my kids have reached the level they have at different things because I haven't always patted them on the back and told them that they do a great job, even when, you know. And, you know, I agree with you 100% on this. You know, this is something we will not argue about. So, we want to argue.
Well,
and
you know,
the
other interesting thing is that Bruce Pearl was on early this morning, and Greenberg has gone out of his way. He talked to Chris Collins, the new coach at Northwestern. He talked to Bruce Pearl, and he's always trying to get them to jump on the side. And fortunately, Bruce Pearl probably – I've gained a lot of respect back for Bruce Pearl. He stood there and he said, hey, I screwed up. I lied to the NCAA. I made a mistake. And hopefully Mike Rice realizes he made a mistake. And I think here's the thing that I have a problem with, and those listeners out there, if you don't agree, I understand – but I'm still standing firm on what I'm saying here. Again, did he cross the line? Yes, he probably did. In areas, he did. But what I don't get is why ESPN has the right to decide how a university, how a person who is placed in a position of authority to oversee things, how they can override them. And I don't know that it was a public opinion outcry as much as it was an ESPN every show. They made an agenda. We're going to beat Rutgers into submission on ESPN. We're going to do it on the radio, and we're going to do it on the television, and we're going to do it with our tweets. And they even got somebody as smart as Jay Billis to jump in on it. But how do they have the right to decide how this should have been handled or how they should have been disciplined? The AD called the coach in. He suspended him 3 games. He fined him $50,000. He sent him to anger management. He did things that he thought would give him a chance to correct his mistakes. Just as, and folks, listen to this, and I'm serious about this, just as coaches do all the time for players in high school, college, and professional, whenever possible, after mistakes are made, coaches try to give those kids an opportunity to correct it without going to the media. I know in my own situation there were times where you took the hit for the player because it wasn't necessary for it to be public in any way. And so I'm really disappointed in ESPN, especially Mike Greenberg. Stephen A. Smith, he is what he is. That's how he, you know, he confuses people that because he uses words out of the thesaurus that do not make sense in the sentences that he's using. The meanings are not correct. And as poorly as I do grammar and things in English, my God, he's far worse. But that's how he gets his ratings. And Mike Greenberg really disappointed me because he somehow has now become a little Napoleon and thinks he's a little more clear on things than what he is. So that's all we're going to say about it.
Wait, I got one comment. We did have a Facebook comment on this subject I wanted to go ahead and read before we left it. Tony Schmidt from Jasper wrote, "With all the people who have video cameras on their phones, you have to be really careful with the tactics you use these days."
I agree.
Little comment.
I agree, and I don't want people to get me wrong. I do think sometimes videos don't tell the truth, all the truth, because you can't ever tell the intent and you can't ever tell the discussion before things are actually appear. But I agree. And I am not saying that what Coach Rice did was right. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that this thing, this agenda by ESPN, went way out of hand. Obviously, somebody didn't support ESPN or do what they wanted them to do. So they said, we're going to do to them what we've been doing now for a few years. We're going to use radio, television, and Twitter and Facebook to get our agenda pushed across. I guess in the business world, in the world, that's a smart way to do it. That's how Wall Street does it. But I can tell you that in all fairness, the university had made a decision. The position, the people that were placed in a position of authority to make those decisions had made a decision on how they wanted to handle what happened. They wanted to handle it, and if Mike Rice didn't make the corrections, then by God, he better have been eliminated. But now we're going after the president of the university. We're, you know, it's as bad as the NCAA is on things. And I guess I still am kind of mad because they used this same agenda for Bob Knight. They did, and we all know it. They used the same agenda for Bob Knight. And then they have the audacity, as Stephen A. Smith would say, they have the audacity the other day to defend Bob Knight now because he works with him. And they said, well, you know, Coach Knight was tough on his players and verbally got on him, but he was doing it to make better kids. Okay? Well, I don't get it. But see, now he works with ESPN, so now they do that. So it's disappointing it's just I found it ironic that they were yelling crucify, crucify, and I got a Twitter, or excuse me, I got a text that said ESPN's Greeny is Jewish, so there's no real Easter for him.
Oh my God,
buddy, I love that. That's funny, and that's probably true. Okay, so that's my little bully pulpit that I wanted to share. And Joe, you know, maybe Blog Talk doesn't deserve us anymore. Maybe we need to hook up with some radio stations and take this thing off Blog Talk and onto the radio.
That'd be a lot less headaches for me.
Hey, I want to remind people before we go to a break here that we will be airing some specials during the Final Four weekend on Saturday, possibly Sunday and Monday as well. We will get that information out as soon as Joe and I decide on a time, and it's a great time to just talk Final Four and four and anything else that's going on in the sports world. So we'll take a look at that. So, Joe, we've got Kyle Neddenrip coming up, and Joe's going to give him a call. And, again, Kyle Neddenrip is from Indianapolis Star. He's the beat writer for the high schools. He does a great job. I kid you not. I can't wait for us to get a chance to talk to him. We've got so many other things to talk about as well. We're going to talk a little bit about Steve Alford going to UCLA and Craig Neal, of course, from Washington, Indiana, great player at Washington High School and Georgia Tech, becoming the new coach at New Mexico. And we thought we were going to get him on the show this week to talk about Alford going to UCLA, and he, at the time he was the interim head coach at New Mexico. And then midweek this thing broke, and Noodles, as they call him, if you remember Craig Neal when he played at Washington High School, long stringy arms and stringy legs, and he was all over the place, but boy could he play. We thought we were going to get him, but once this thing broke and he became the head coach, things piled up and we were not able to get Craig on the show this week, but we will. We want to talk a little bit about Ed Rush, the head of the Pac-12 officials, and comments he made in officials meeting talking about putting a bounty on Sean Miller at Arizona, offering a trip to the Bahamas or something and $5,000. Ed Rush has resigned as the head of the Pac-12 officials. So you really, I don't know if he was kidding or not. I can't believe that if he was kidding, he wouldn't have laughed it off. But the officials in that room, and there were several, are claiming they took it very serious what he was saying, and I thought that was pretty shocking. So he's resigned as the head of the Pac-12 officials, and be interesting to hear some more that came out of that. And as we might know, if you've been following the story, as you might know, Sean Miller did get a technical. That was part of the bounty to get him a technical and possibly run him from a game. Auburn football is back in the news. National championship a couple years ago, down to a horrible, horrible team. And now they're back in the news for cheating scandals. We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll talk about the Final Four. We'll talk about Major League Baseball. How about Gunnar Kiel going from IU to LSU to Notre Dame, and now he's visiting Ball State? We'll talk about new members to the Hoops Hall of Fame and whatever else you want to talk about. But first, we're going to go to our first break, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Kyle Neddenrip of the Indianapolis Star, and we'll talk high school basketball with Kyle. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
Quarterback, go ahead.
Me? Or, shouldn't we, like, learn by dodging balls that are thrown at us, or...
That's what this sack of wrenches is for. If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
What?
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. If you have a text, a comment you'd like to text to Coach K, you can text me at 812-480-9449. And as I said, we are not like ESPN. If you text us, we will air it. Try to be in as good a taste as you can, but we will air at least what we can air. We've got Kyle Nudenrip of the Indianapolis Star joining us now, and Kyle does the very best job that I have seen in a long time in covering an expansive Indiana high school hoops sports throughout Indiana, especially the Indianapolis area. And Kyle, it is a pleasure to have you back on the show.
Well, I really appreciate that, and yeah, thanks for having me on again. Appreciate you having me on.
Kyle, you have done a great job of covering the high school basketball scene. Well, all the high school scenes, but the focus has been on Indiana high school basketball the last few months. And I've been reading your articles and Mr. Basketballs and Super All-Star teams and all the different things been going on. And I want to talk a little bit about that today. But first, if we could, let's just jump back a week or two into the state finals. 1A, 2A, 3A, 4A. Of course, we had the great 4A game between Cathedral and Carmel. It didn't start out that way, but by fourth quarter and on, really middle of the second half, turned into a pretty good championship game. Let's go back, just some of your thoughts on those championship games. And let's just, we don't have to start in a specific class, but since I did bring up Cathedral and Carmel, just what are your thoughts on the game between Cathedral and Carmel?
Well, that's as good a place to start as any. I would say you're right. I mean, you had it pegged right. I think it ended up being sort of the game we thought it was going to be. It just didn't get there the way we probably thought it was going to, because Carmel just jumped on them right from the get go, and they were locked in. Cathedral, I had a chance. I was sort of seated right behind the Cathedral bench, and pretty good vantage point, to listen to Andy Fagan, and I agreed with what he was saying. He's telling his guys, we're not being us. They were giving up offensive rebounds and leaving shooters wide open, and the kind of things that are unexpected from Cathedral. By the second half, they started playing like themselves. It was a little too late. And, Carmel's a very good team. If you give them an inch, they'll take a mile. And they certainly did in that game. And I think a very well-played game. The two teams we probably thought were going to be there. And, just got to give a lot of credit to Scott Hetty and Carmel for winning two in a row.
Yeah, and I was able to catch most of the games on TV down in the southern part of the state. I was really surprised, and I don't want to single him out because he is an IU recruit, but Colin Hartman just didn't seem to ever find a rhythm in that game. From where you were sitting, was that a combination of the defense? Was that a combination of Cathedral not making some adjustments, or was it just he just didn't seem to be able to find a rhythm?
Well, yeah, and I agree. He didn't. He wasn't a factor, And I think that was, partially you just got to give a lot of credit to Zach McRoberts for the job he did on him. And Zach's a kid who, he doesn't light up the box score. He averages about 10 points a game, but he's just a guy who does a lot of little things right. And he defended Hartman most of the game. He did a nice job on him. And Hartman's not a huge scorer anyway. He's going to get his 12 or 13 most of the time. Sometimes he'll go for 20 or so, but he's not a huge. He's not going to go out and score 30 or 40 on a given night. But he is important to what they do, obviously, offensively. And he got some shots late in the game. And actually, I thought his three, he made a long three-pointer there at the end of the third quarter that, if you remember, that kind of allowed Cathedral to have a chance. He hit it from about 35 feet, got him a little bit of momentum. And then the fourth quarter, of course, they made their run. So that was a big shot he hit. But, yeah, other than that, offensively, didn't do a whole lot. And they did a pretty good job on Jalen Coleman, you know, for the most part as well, I thought. And he's going to get his, you know, 16 or 17, you know, pretty much every night. But I thought they did. And that's no surprise. I mean, Carmel defends very well, and they know what they're doing. And didn't allow Cathedral to have many open looks. And Cathedral's a great three-point shooting team. And of course, Carmel knows that and did a good job defending those guys.
Well, it was a great finish to what started out as a struggling game, at least on one side, but it's a great finish for the final, for the championships of the class system. Was there any other game in the 1A, 2A, 3A that stood out to you, or any players that stood out to you? Anything that caught your attention through the process of the state championship games?
Yeah, as far as the other three games go, I thought the 3A game was probably the best just overall game of the day. Greensburg made that run late. Bryant McIntosh hit the three-pointer there with about 27 seconds left to tie it. And really, I thought he was the difference, you know, for them. And, you know, Bryant has mostly been, you know, kind of he's a very good point guard, you know, and he plays that role well. He doesn't need to score a whole bunch of points, but, you know, their leading scorer, Sean Sellers, fouled out late in regulation, and McIntosh had to, you know, take on more of a scoring role. And he ended up scoring, I think, you know, 16 points in the fourth quarter in overtime and really put the team on his back. You know, I thought that was the mark of a winner, you know, to be able to do that, you know, especially with one of their best players out, you know, and Fort Wayne Concordia had a couple of guys foul out too. So, you know, it wasn't like they were at full strength in overtime either, but, you know, that game was a very good game, you know, back and forth. Fort Wayne Concordia was better, you know, than DJ McCall is going to be a junior all-star. And he was very good. And I hadn't seen him play before, but, you know, that's a very solid team, you know, deserving of being a state champion, you know, and just didn't quite get it done. But, you know, that was the best game, I thought. But all three of those other games, I thought, you know, Linton Stockton had that game within five against Bowman Academy with about 4 minutes left and, you know, kind of ran out of steam there. I thought Devon Dillard from Bowman, sophomore, very impressed with him. You know, he's going to be a good one. He should be an Indiana All-Star by the time he's a senior, you know, if he keeps progressing like he is. Austin Carazia from Linton Stockton, you know, just his stock keeps going up, you know, because of the tournament that he had, and probably going to end up with the chance to at least walk on at a D1 program, if not get a scholarship. So, you know, I think he helped himself a lot. You know, the 1A game, Triton, it couldn't quite get it done against Borden, but that was another good game. You know, again, very impressed with the job Borden did. I like them after seeing them play down in Seymour at the semi-state the week before, and then, you know, the chance to see them again was very impressive. You know, they're not a team of stars, but just a bunch of kids who grew up together and been playing together for a long time, and you know, those kind of teams are fun to watch. And so overall, I thought we had good stories in all four games. I thought it was a fun state finals day.
Yeah, I really liked the Linton Bowman Academy matchup because it was really a contrast in styles. Not that Linton couldn't get up and down the floor score, but from an athletic standpoint, Bowman Academy just had the athletes. I saw Bowman play Evansville North down in Evansville during Evansville Bossy's tourney classic that they had near the holidays. And the thing about Bowman was, and all through the game, you could sense it, is if you can just handle the ebbs and flows, you're going to turn the ball over. And I think Coach Hart told his kids this throughout preparation for the game. You're going to make some turnovers, but we're going to have opportunities to get back in the game if we can just keep our head. And they did, and it looked like there's no way they're going to come back. But as somebody who's been around the game for a long time and all the games you've seen, you can just kind of get a feel that Bowman's going to make their own mistakes by trying to go too fast, too quick on shots and do things just a little too quickly. And Linton was able to come out, get a rebound, hit a shot, make a foul shot, get a layup, and it turned into a pretty good game. So it did end up good state finals for everybody involved. And even though I'm not a class basketball Great fan of it. It still was good. I was happy for Borden as well. Now we go to Mr. Basketball, Kyle, Zach Irvin. And I know that Joe Milligan, my co-host, is going to come in here and ask a question. He's probably going to ask something about the process. But when you look at Zach Irvin and all the players you saw throughout the year, is your feeling that, yes, this guy was the Mr. Basketball?
Yeah, and, you know, and I kind of, you know, sometimes people ask, you know, how do you, you know, what's the criteria, I guess, for Mr. Basketball? You know, what makes up, you know, the decision-making process? And, you know, it's very open-ended, you know, it is, and I kind of like that, you know, maybe it kind of leaves it open to the voter. You know, what do you think is Mr. Basketball? Who is your Mr. Basketball? And it's just a very... You know, then you decide, you know, what you think it is. Is it a career? Is it one season? Is it, you know, is it the best player? Is it the guy who wins state? You know, it's up to you, the voter, to decide. To me, I see it as, you know, who is the best player? And all those things kind of factor in, you know, team success and being a good teammate and, you know, and that sort of thing. I think that it kind of factors in. But to me, it's, you know, who is the best player in the state of Indiana? And to me, I think it was right. You know, I think Zach Irvin was the best player. You know, I think it was questionable. You know, I think Demetrius Jackson is right up there. You know, I think Bryson Scott, who's going to Purdue, is a very, very, very good player. You know, and I think those three probably were who I would think would be the top three players in the state. But I think Mike Crawford, you know, with what he did at Tipton, you know, he kind of got some of that vote, you know, people who saw his run and what he did in the tournament. But, you know, at the bottom line, I know Zach didn't win a sectional, but all sectionals aren't created equal, you know, and that one is the most, I don't think there's any doubt that was the toughest one in the state this year. And, you know, they should have won that game. They didn't. I was there. I watched it. I couldn't believe they lost. But, you know, Zach Irvin, you know, this team, probably people thought going into the year might have been about 500, you know, and they ended up 17-4. And I thought he really matured. I thought he became a, you know, never that he was not a good kid or anything, but he just became more vocal. You could tell he's more confident in himself, carried himself like a leader, you know, and put up big numbers too, you know, and not just because he shot it all the time either. He was efficient, and I think he's going to be playing in the NBA someday, to be honest with you. I think he's that good and that has that much potential.
I think Joe has a question for you. Joe, go ahead.
Yeah,
well, maybe
yeah,
Kyle,
yeah,
maybe
okay,
he's not
here,
ready for it.
Yeah.
Oh,
no,
go ahead,
here
Joe.
I am. I had myself on mute. I was talking, but what, no one was hearing me. I kind of like my wife.
All right.
I've got two questions, one for me and one from a Facebook person. You know, I've not seen Bryson Scott play a whole lot, and being a Purdue alum, I just wanted to know where you thought he would fit in that, you know, as far as the Boilermakers, which are in a lot of needs of a lot of different kind of players. And then also the Facebook question is, what kind of advantage does Bowman Academy and schools like that have being a magnet school?
Well, I'll answer the – Bryson Scott first. He was, you know, I think he's a guy, you know, he's kind of somebody that Purdue doesn't have right now, that, you know, he's able to get his own shot. You know, and Tyrone Johnson is somewhat that way as well, but Bryson's probably, I covered Tyrone for 3 years and you know, think very highly of him, and I think he's going to have a really good senior year. But I think this is a, you know, a chance for Bryson to, you know, come in, and he's a guy who's just going to attack. He's going to attack the basket. He's going to play hard. I mean, there's nobody who plays harder than him. You know, between the lines, he gets after it. You know, the thing that, you know, people question about him, does, you know, is he going to share the ball enough? You know, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. You know, I think Matt Painter needs a guy who's just going to, you know, try to make things happen. You know, create and be a guy who's going to, you know, score points. You know, that's what Purdue needs, honestly, is somebody who's kind of an attacker offensively. The second question about Bowman Academy, basically a charter school like that, you know, they can take people from wherever. You know, they can take kids from any, you know, any area of the state. So that's their advantage, I guess. Another advantage, I think, and I actually wrote about Bowman, it's been a while, it may have been 3 years ago, but, you know, at the time, you know, they became a state power immediately, and they were playing 1A and went on in one state. I think it was their first year even playing in the tournament. And Marvin Ray was a former, you know, AAU coach. He'd coached a lot of these kids who ended up going to Bowman Academy, and, you know, they'd kind of, he'd been there for a couple of years before they were eligible for the tournament. You know, so he attracted a lot of the talent from Gary, ended up going to play for Marvin. And it was a situation, you know, the Gary Public Schools were, you know, struggling, honestly. And I think it was an opportunity that they capitalized on at the right time, you know, to build that not only just basketball, but to build a school there that was an alternative to the Gary Public Schools. And, you know, because they were in a power almost immediately, you know, they've continued to build on that. And I think they will continue to. You know, if you saw their crowd there last week at the state finals, I mean, they had a really big crowd. It was a community feel to it. And I think some people, you know, kind of knock the charter schools sometimes because it's not a, you know, necessarily a community. But I think Bowman does have that community aspect to it. And say what you will, I know there's some people out there who don't like Bowman, or, you know, think they've had too much success, or they should be playing, you know, 3A or 4A, which they will be playing 3A next year. And I think they'll be fine, but, you know, but say what you will, but he's built the power, you know, quickly there, and they play a lot of 4A schools, and they do well. So so basically that's a long answer to, I don't know, you know, if that answered your question at all, but yeah, so.
Well, Kyle, and just to add to that, and you can comment on this as well, I think that's where, you know, class basketball was started to give – the smaller schools the opportunity to succeed in the tournament. That's just the honest truth. There were principals out there that said our communities never get a chance to taste the success in the tournament. We want that, and that was the opportunity it gave. Then you have the Bowman Academies that come along. You have the parochial schools, and I coached in a parochial school my first job, so I'm not on any side of the fence here. I'm simply stating the fact that class basketball then becomes an advantage for charter schools or parochial schools who endeavor to focus athletics in that direction. And then IHSA counters with the success rule, which I kind of struggle with the success rule a little bit, Kyle, and you can comment on this as I finish up, but because I think sometimes some of these schools who have tasted some tournament success maybe had a strong junior-senior class. Those kids graduate, and there's not strong classes following them, at least not for a few years, and the school gets penalized by being pushed up into another class level that they really aren't capable of competing in and year out. So thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of like you. I don't know if that's the right answer to, you know, what – you know, ails, I guess, if you think there's a problem, you know, but at the same time, it's like, you know, the same teams, and this is more of a football thing, I think. This was a way for the IHSA to deal with the football success of just a small amount of schools every year and apply it across the board. And, you know, there's really not going to be that many basketball programs affected by this. You know, Bowman was, but that was not a huge surprise, and I don't even think they care. I mean, I think they're fine playing 3A or 4A or whatever they end up playing. But this was more of a folk, you know, you got the Bishop Lures and the girls and Chatards of the world, you know, Lafayette Central Catholic, you know, just completely annihilating everyone every year in the tournament. So I think that was a way for them to bump them all up, you know, and apply it to all sports without just singling out those teams and without singling out parochial schools too, you know, because it applies to public schools and charter schools. So, you know, I don't know. I think there's a better way, you know, focusing just on basketball, I think there's a better way probably to run the tournament. You know, I went to all those town hall meetings, or a lot of them, you know, last year when they were talking about the single class, and, you know, I'd love to see it go back to a single class. I don't think that would ever happen. You know, I'm not sure that's even the right answer anymore, but I'd like to see some sort of, you know, a compromise or, some sort of tweak maybe to you know, take advantage of, I don't know, just fan interest. And I think a lot of times now, I think because you have – the sectional rounds are great to me, you know, because you have, you know, rivalry, at least around here, you know, the fan, you know, there's a large amount of fans out there. You know, you have rivals playing each other for the most part around here. You have great games, you know, exciting games. But then I think you kind of lose some momentum because, you know, once you get to the regional, there's quite a few blowouts this year, and you got a lot of your best teams sitting on the sidelines. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. To me, it seems like there's something that could be done. I know people have brought up different compromise ideas. I'd like for them to seriously consider, you know, some of those. But I don't have the answers. And maybe there's nothing that needs to be done. Maybe that's just the way it is right now. And you know, it's just – it's a different world we live in than it used to be. So maybe you'll never get some of those fans back. But, yeah, I think there's some things we can look at to help the system.
Yeah, and Kyle, I think that there was a lot of great things that happened in the tournament this year and during the season. We've got some really, really good players in the state of Indiana. We've always had good coaches. We've got good teams. But I as a coach, I have a problem when a team has to drive an hour and a half to play in the next round of the tournament and it's not the state finals or 2 hours. I just think that's excessive. But I grew up at a time and coached at a time when you might go 30, 45 minutes at the most to go to your semi-state level game. So it kind of takes that regional feel or close area feel out of it. You know, one of the other things that I wanted to get with you, and I appreciate you spending time with us, and you can follow Kyle on Twitter to our listeners, but you put together a super all-star team the other day. And I pulled it up and looked at it and just really enjoyed looking at who you chose and your thought, you know, what they accomplished and that type of thing. And as we go through some of the names, get your ideas on it. But when you put this together, what was your criteria? How was it put together?
Yeah, this is basically our super team that we do every year, and we have a, you know, super team player of the year, and then we pick out, you know, 15 guys from our – it's only our coverage area, which we cover the whole state, but we, you know, for our circulation area, it's basically focused on, you know, Marion County and the surrounding, you know, the surrounding donut pretty much. So that's kind of our, you know, criteria, pick out the 15 best players from around here that we cover regularly. And, you know, it was tough this year. I mean, there was probably, 17, 18 guys that really were considered strongly. And, you know, we ended up with those 15. But you know, I think Zach Urban was pretty clear since he won Mr. Basketball. He was, the super team player of the year. But, you know, also strongly considered, you know, Trayvon Blewett from Park Tudor, who's a junior and obviously not eligible for Mr. Basketball, and Trey Lyles from Tech, you know, also a junior. And that's going to be, you know, kind of jumping ahead. I mean, that's going to be a heck of a race next year for Mr. Basketball because you got those two, plus James Blackman, Jr. from Fort Wayne, and then, you know, Jaquan Lyle from down there in Evansville. So, you know, and whoever else pops up too. But I think those four, you know, man, that's going to be a heck of a race next year. But yeah, so I thought our super team was really strong this year. I thought we had good mix of, classes, you know, between the juniors and seniors. Also had a sophomore on there and a freshman. Aaron Gordon from North Central, the freshman, and Jalen Coleman, the sophomore from Cathedral. So, you know, a couple underclassmen were able to make it. And, you know, a very strong team, I thought. It was after the team we had last year with so many – so much depth and talent, you know, that 2012 class, you know, this 13 class ended up being pretty good too.
Now, as you list them, is that the order in which you guys put together? Is that the order of where you rank them 1 through 15?
No, that's, I think they're actually put alphabetically, I'm not exactly sure. No, that's just, it wasn't by any order of how we put them in there. So,
well, our listeners, they can go to the Indianapolis Star and online, and it's great. You've got them set up. You've got pictures of each player, runs as a slideshow, their statistics, where they're going to college or if they're an underclassman. And Aaron Gordon is getting a lot of publicity. People are talking about him. Of course, he's an outstanding player. He's a younger brother of Eric Gordon, I believe, and IU obviously plays into that. How good is this freshman?
Well, you know how it is. You know, there's always it never fails. Every year, I always hear, you know, we've got a sensational eighth grader. He's going to be the best thing ever, and ultimately, you know, those guys are good. You know, obviously, but that's kind of the nature of basketball. You know, us basketball fans always love to hunt for the next great thing. But you know, Aaron Gordon's a guy who, you know, lived up to all that. You know, he had a great freshman year. You know, who knows if he ends up being as good as Eric. I mean, how many people are? You know, he's such a great player, you know, at every level he's played at. So I think that's probably unfair to compare, you know, Aaron. And, of course, we do it anyway just because he's his brother, and that's a natural thing to do. But, he'll be a difference maker, definitely, in high school. I think he's a front runner. When it's his turn to be a senior for Mr. Basketball, you know, he's going to be – you know, shoot, he averaged almost 20 points as a freshman, so he's going to break some records. And I know that's he doesn't say it anymore, but he once told me that's his goal is to break his brother's scoring record at North Central. So, you know, we'll see if that happens. I think he's probably got a head start on Eric because Eric was hurt part of his freshman year in high school. So, but yeah, he's very good. He needs to work on his jump shot a little bit, but real impressed how physical he is. He just says he doesn't play like a freshman, you know. Freshmen, even the best ones are sometimes a little timid, you know, a little not as strong as the upperclassmen. But he had no problem, you know, getting to the basket and finishing, and hadn't really seen anybody do that, you know, since Devontae Smith Rivera was a freshman there a few years ago. He was kind of the same way, just with his strength and ability. So, for a long answer to that, he's going to be good. You know, how good, you know, remains to be seen, but he'll be. You know, he'll be a very good high school player for sure.
Last thing before we let you go, and again, we appreciate all your time. Ed Schilling, Park Tudor, gone, part of UCLA staff now, or is that what we're hearing?
Yeah. Yeah, he's
yeah.
out there
done
now.
Done deal, and is that going to take one of his star players along next year, or a year from now, I guess I should say?
Well, yeah, he's you know, talked to him, you know, whenever that was, 2 days ago, and he's definitely on staff, and he'll be. I think he's in Atlanta actually this weekend for the Final Four. I think he was planning on meeting with Alford last night so they could kind of map out, you know, responsibilities and kind of what's next for him. But that's a good question. You know, Trayvon Blewett, of course, is uncommitted there at Park Tudor, and. You know, I know for a fact that he will recruit Trayvon, but I'm not sure, you know, if he wants to go that far away from home or, you know, where that kind of, you know, where all that stands right now. But yeah, he'll be interested in him. I don't think it's not like a done deal or he's going to UCLA or anything because he's, you know, strongly considering the schools around here that had been recruiting him for a long time. So, you know, we'll kind of see how that plays out. You know, I think, you know, he'll have decisions to make, and obviously has a real good relationship with Ed Schilling.
Yeah. You still there, Kyle?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. I think that it's probably going to be a great recruiting weapon out of the state of Indiana and the Midwest for Steve Alford. Of course, Ed Schilling, former high school coach before, former college assistant, former head coach, did a lot of work with young people in the Indianapolis area on their basketball and done a great job at Park Tudor. And last question, and I promise I'll let you go. Have you met my good friend Ron Heklinski? I think he's helping out at Cecina now.
Yeah, actually, I got to talk with him a little bit when he did the All-Stars a few years ago, and then I talked to him, did a story on the Wigwam earlier a couple months ago, and talking about that, and they're doing a great job with the scene and kind of getting that program going. So, you know, I had a chance to visit with them a couple times this year.
Yeah, it's interesting what's going on at Cecina, and that's all I'll say. I know they're going to work hard, and they want to create almost a Park Tudor type style atmosphere. So we'll see how they do down there. Kyle, thanks for being on, and we follow you, and I tell you what, our listeners need to follow, whether you're in Indiana or you're in the Midwest area, where you're wherever you're at, you can follow him on Twitter, get on the IndyStar webpage, a lot of great stuff about the high school players, and a lot of these guys are going on, and they're going to be your Division I players all around the country. So, Kyle, once again, have a great weekend, and thanks for being on the show.
You bet. Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right, thanks a lot. We're going to go to break. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Are you in the market for a new fence? Look no further than the Willis Fence Company. Willis Fence Company offers wood fences, chain link fences, aluminum and iron fences, and polyvinyl fences. Give fence professional Joe a call at 630-2449 for a free estimate today. The Willis Fence Company, a fence for every taste and budget.
We are going to do what we set out to do. We're going to win that tournament.
Yes! I knew it. I knew you were a champion the minute I saw you bowl, Ish.
I'm not going to bowl. You are.
You are such a loser. You're a bona fide schmuck. Look at me!
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show, and I'm Joe Milligan, and joined by the Coach Ken Schulteis. And Coach, I've got a couple of Facebook messages here. One, first one's not a question for you. It's a comment that Josh Houchin wanted me to bring up to you. That Trey Burke has won the Wooden Award, and he completes the sweep of the Player of the Year trophies. And also, Tony Schmidt had a follow-up question to the magnet school question. I know we can't ask Kyle, but I can maybe ask you your opinion. He said, shouldn't all schools be allowed to do that then?
Well, first of all, for Trey Burke, I'm happy for the – you know, I never fault someone – for getting awards or for being recognized. I think that's wonderful. The guy has obviously worked his butt off to be a great player. Is he the best player in the country? I don't know. Is he one of the top players in the country? Absolutely, Josh Houchin and Michigan fans. He's absolutely one of the top players in the country. Has he learned to make the players around him better by creating opportunities for them? Yes, but, you know, he didn't learn that till late in the year, and it's worked out because they're in the Final Four. It was interesting when you look at the matchup in the Final Four, and I'll get to Tony's question in just a minute. When you look at the matchups in the Final Four and you look at Syracuse and you look at Michigan, you know, the zone by Syracuse is going to have its work cut out for them. Michigan's got five guys that can score. Michigan's got five guys that can create shot opportunities, I believe. McGarry has improved a ton. One thing, though, Michigan has to be careful of is the dribble penetrations and the screens, the pick and rolls, are not going to be as simple against a zone. And anybody who really understands the elements of a zone, if you play it well, and a zone is not standing and taking up space. A zone combines man principles and team movement and footwork and getting to areas and knowing when to pinch and when to release. And Syracuse is doing that as well as anybody in the country. It was funny because I heard one of the talking heads today said, why doesn't everybody zone? And you know, I actually think it was, and I know I've been on his case today, Mike Greenberg. Well, everybody doesn't zone because everybody can't play a good zone. Syracuse has played it this way for years and years, and some years it's not that good. But he's got the right personnel. They're long, they're athletic, they're tall, and there's a difference between long and tall. Long meaning arms, and tall in height. They're quick, they're athletic, and they play well like, together. But that didn't go on the whole year. They have lost games. But if you haven't faced their zone, it's tough, but Michigan will give them a run because, first of all, they'll transition and not allow them to get set up in the zone. And remember, you can hurt a defense if you can get out with the ball and not allow it to set up. And secondly, They can all shoot and create opportunities to shoot. The one thing they do, though, is they put the ball on the floor a lot. They're going to have to move the basketball, swing it, kick it, penetrate, draw the double team, and kick again for the shot. But that's the key. They can all make shots, and they can all create shots. But they will have some trouble on their screen and rolls, which they love to do. They love to pick and send those guys off on the dribble penetration pick and roll. So, but that's great for Trey Burke. But we'll see what happens this weekend. I've eaten crow all week for Josh. So, you know, that's the way that one goes. Joe, as far as Bowman Academy, I don't know if all schools should be able to do that. I can tell you right now that in the state of Indiana, there are a lot of situations in which borders, school borders, remember the old school borders where if you lived here, you had to go to school there? Well, that has changed a lot in the state of Indiana, and students can cross borders in order to go to a different school. For example, I know down in Vandenberg County area, you will see people coming from Posey County, from Gibson County, into Vandenberg County to go to Evansville North. They can cross county lines to go to school. The same can be said for possibly people in Warwick County into Vandenberg or areas. So some of that has changed, and I don't know all the specific rules on it, but it used to be if you lived in this school district, this was the only school you could go to. Now a lot of that has changed. You know, you don't have to go to Wrights because you live in the Wrights area. You don't have to go to Bossy because you live in the Bossy area. A lot of that has changed, and you maybe not see that on the smaller local county levels, but we are seeing a lot of that in the city. Having said that, I think it's bad. I think it's bad because I think the IHSA has let this thing get out of control. I think a few years back, the IHSA said, you know, we're spending too much money fighting court cases on where people can go to school or this or that. They gave into class basketball. They gave into transfer rules. They gave into all these things. And now it's the Wild West. Up in Indianapolis, it's the Wild West. It's old Las Vegas. It's wild. And people are moving around and changing schools, and I'm going to go here, and he's going to go here. And then Bowman Academy situation, charter schools, kids can come in. And Bowman Academy is going to stay good. And folks, we've seen colleges do it, and I told you on our special Sweet 16 Hoops edition last weekend that I was not for hiring AAU brokers as assistant coaches on a college level, because at some point you still have to teach kids how to play. And there are a lot of, not all of them, but there are a lot of AAU coaches that are simply assembling the best players, putting them out there, letting them run up and down and play, and then taking advantage of the situation and being the guy who talks to the colleges and taking that out of the high school coach or educator's hands. So, Tony, I don't think that that's going to happen. I think that there's more leeway than maybe what you realize for people to go to different schools. But I hope that it never gets that way, because it's already a free-for-all out there, and it's just going to be who can recruit better on the high school level, who can talk the talk to get players in. So, Joe, I noticed that on the top 15 All-Stars, Basil Smotherman was one of the people chosen. You know Basil, don't you?
I know who he is, and I've got some good report from our Indy Hoops correspondent, Don Schulteis, on him. So, yeah, he's come
Basil's
a long way.
Going to be going – where's he going to?
He's going to be a Purdue Boilermaker along with Bryson Scott and Kendall Stevens, who's Everett Stevens' kid. And, he's going to be a good one. I got a question for you.
I think he will be a good player for him, and he's obviously highly touted. Zach Irvin, of course, was on there. Devin Davis of Warren Central going to IU was on the superstar team up out of Indianapolis area. I like how he called it the donut area. Colin Hartman, of course, is going to IU. Smotherman, Purdue. Michael Volvic, who played for Carmel, state champs. Man, he played a great game. He's had a great year. He's going to walk on at Butler, Joe. He's going to actually walk on. So he's going D1, playing in the new Big East as a walk-on. Turner from Pike, who's going to go to Ball State, possibly, if they get the coaching situation taken care of. Trey Lyles, Jr., Trevon Blewett, Jr., Zach McRoberts, Carmel, uncommitted right now, Jalen Coleman of Cathedral, a sophomore, Aaron Brennan of Guerin Catholic, a junior, good-looking junior, Aaron Gordon, a freshman from North Central, Latham, Darvis Latham, who's actually going to play football at IU, was one of the top 15. Jordan Pickett of Indianapolis Pike, who will be tending Loyola of Chicago. At least that was what was listed. And P.J. Thompson, who went to Brebeuf, he is committed to Ball State. So in those top 15, Ball State potentially has two coming in, and I believe they're still looking for a coach. Have you heard anything on Ball State? And if anybody else, any of our listeners has, please text in or Facebook us, or you can call us. Text Coach K at 812-480-9449 or call the show at 773-897-6325 if you've heard anything on the Ball State coaching search. Hey, Joe, what do you think about Alford going to UCLA and Craig Neal, longtime assistant for Steve Alford, not just at New Mexico, but at Iowa as well, getting the New Mexico. That's great. A couple of Indiana guys, one of them a local guy, now the head coach at New Mexico in Craig Neal, Noodles as they call him, and Steve Alford, which we aren't sure if it's a good fit, but at least it is in the short term, going to UCLA.
Well, I wonder if the last Hoosier that coached there, at least I think the last Hoosier that coached there, not Indiana Hoosier, but from the state of Indiana, I do want to point out that John Wooden is a Purdue graduate, brought in a lot of Indiana kids. And it'll be interesting to see if, you know, his philosophy will be to bring in. Did Trevon Blewett, did he commit to UCLA?
No, he hasn't yet, but his head coach at – his head, high school head coach, Ed Schilling at Park Tudor, was hired by Alford this week to take that job. And Ed Schilling is a former high school head coach at Logansport, Western Boone. He went on to coach at Wright State as a head coach. He was an assistant coach for Calipari at UMass. I met Ed years ago when we would go out to the five-star. He would work the camp a little bit. I got to meet him a little bit. Don't know him personally, folks, but know much about him. And he went – when he left Wright State, he went into Indianapolis and really took advantage of the large population and just started teaching basketball, just really individual and group workouts. And then he moved in and took the Park Tudor job and used his connections from working out with the kids and developing kids to bring some nice players to Park Tudor. And you know what kind of program they've had the last few years. He's going to go with Alford. So that, I think that connection gives them a chance at Blewett. And it also gives them a great connection to Indiana and the Midwest in bringing what I think Steve Alford's looking for, players who know how to play the game and have a good work ethic, out to UCLA and combine that with the good talent that's already there. And I can tell you, for those of you who remember all the success UCLA had under John Wooden, you need to realize, and Joe, maybe it's because of his Purdue education, he just didn't use California players to get that done. He brought players in from all over the country. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Lou Alcindor at the time from New York. He brought in a bunch of guys from the Indiana area, played for East Chicago, great players that came in and played for him there. They were not necessarily California kids. They were kids from around the country that he was able to bring out to UCLA. and create the dynasty that was the UCLA Bruins, and has made it so difficult for so many good coaches to follow him. And I hopefully Steve Alford can accomplish what he needs to accomplish and doesn't fall into that group. But I'd say that UCLA becomes moves towards the top of the list for him, Joe, now that his former high school head coach has gone and joined the staff out there. You think that was planned?
I don't know. But, you know, the question I got to ask you, wasn't there, you know, can Trevon Blewett, is there a period? I thought there was an NCAA rule that was put into effect that high school coaches couldn't be hired just for that. But maybe it's maybe there has to be a certain weight, you know, before anyone from Park Tudor could go to school there. Am I right or am I wrong? You know,
I don't know, but maybe one of our listeners knows that. Maybe our Indy correspondent, Don Schulteis, can find that out. But I'm sure that is somewhere in the rule book. But I would think at some point there had to be an amount of time, because you can't penalize players because a coach moves from their school to another position. I don't think that would be fair to anybody, but we'll see. Go ahead.
It was partly put in, I think, because of Jamal McGlure, you know, was going to another university that's close to my heart, and Kentucky came in at the last second and offered his high school coach a position, and I think that was one of the, you know, they'd started seeing more and more of that happening. You know, I don't know if maybe there will be an AAU rule someday. I don't know, because, you know, you talked about the AAU stuff. You talked about it at length. And, you know, I think that maybe it hurt. You know, maybe they needed to find someone, IU in particular, needed to find someone other than that AAU coach to maybe develop Cody Zeller's skills a little bit more instead of.
Well, for our young people listening and for the parents of young potential players, I'm going to say it again. AAU is great for honing your game skills as far as getting you comfortable on the court and playing in game situations. Don't get me wrong. But you have to get in the gym and you have to work on your individual skills, one-on-one, two-on-two, three-on-three. You have to learn the game of basketball, understand when you've got a person beat, how to beat the person, what to do with your body in certain situations. That isn't always done. And you can say, well, what about the great players that are playing AAU? You've got it. You just said it. The great players playing AAU. If the good player playing AAU and the great player playing AAU just play AAU, guess what? The great player is going to stay the great player. But if the good player is playing AAU and working on his individual skills, and I'm telling you, working on your individual skills, being coached, one-on-one, two-on-two, three-on-three, then the good player is going to raise his game level, his skill level, and he's going to be able to compete much more competitively with the great player. In fact, there are going to be times when the good player and the people around him who understand how to play the game of basketball beat the great players because they don't know what to do when the changes get made. But I got to get off that. We got to go on to something else here, Joe. What do you think about Ed Rush, Pac-12, was the Pac-12 head of officials, going into a meeting and talking about putting a bounty on Sean Miller of Arizona, offering money or trips if they tee him up or run him out or. What's the guy thinking?
Now, have the Mike and Mike show been on that one there? You know, that's another one they could, you know, it could be on.
Not as hard because the agenda was against Rutgers because Rutgers didn't play ball with them. But, yeah, they were on it. I mean, I just find it amazing. If he was kidding, boy, you would think he would have laughed, joked about it in some way. Brought across, guys, I'm only kidding. I can't believe he said it. But that, you know, I've always wondered about some officials, Joe. I've always wondered about them. I'm sure I made a couple of them mad enough that every time I came they were going to deal with me, they probably had their thoughts.
Yeah, I'm sure. I witnessed you from your WC days all the way through your Jasper days, and I'm sure there was a handful that felt that way about you.
But seriously, you know, you coach. You know, when you go into the game, the official knows the coach is going to try to work the game to make sure that his team is, in his opinion, fairly treated, that the style of play that the coach wants to see played is able to be played without fouls or penalties, and that if the other team has a style of play or players that's going to make it difficult on my team, I've got to be working that official to make sure the close calls or the calls, period, get made so my team has an opportunity, has at least a competitive opportunity to win the game.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I got a question for you, though. You know, it's the winter. Winter weather's slowly getting past us. And have you looked at the standings? After most teams have played 3 games in Major League Baseball, and there's only 1 undefeated team, and there's 1 team that hasn't won a game yet. And everyone's pretty well 2-1, 1-2. And what would it be like if you actually had some 3 and 4 team races? I'm sure, you know, with the schedule being so big, you know, people are going to spread themselves out. But have you ever seen that? It usually seems like there's, you know, 4 or 5 teams undefeated after, you know, at least after this. And all of a sudden you've got Washington that's undefeated. Is it Washington? Washington or the Phillies? I don't want to make Mike McQuaid mad, a listener of ours. You know, Washington's, yeah, is undefeated, and the Marlins are 0-3. But other than that, everything's pretty even, you know. And have you watched any baseball yet?
I have watched baseball, and I have been following it. And I'm not shocked by the team that's undefeated. They've got a great young team. Bryce Harper, of course, a great everyday player. Strasburg, a great pitcher. But in between those two, they got a lot of good players, and they got a pretty good manager. And as far as the team that has not won, that doesn't shock me either, because we know they had a fire sale over the winter. And between them and the Houston Astros, who I watched a little bit of the Astros play the Rangers the other night, and I was sitting there with my sons, and they're announcing the names of the guys on the Astros as they come out on the field, and we were kind of looking at each other saying, who? Who? Who is that? And they did end up winning the game. But I know you're happy, Joe, because the Yankees did get a victory last night. Rivera came in and slammed the door. Pettit pitched pretty well, and the Yankees got a W finally in that win column.
You know, one thing I got to ask is, you know, looking over the standings, I guess I'm out of touch with the world or something. I live in a little bubble. When did the Houston Astros become an American League team? Was that just this year?
This year. It was changed. They wanted to equalize the number of teams, and they made some adjustments, and Houston ends up in the American League. Yeah, I mean, you know, you grow up all your life and you see the Houston Astros National League. And then you wake up one day and they're in the American League. But I'm sure that a lot of people felt that way when the Milwaukee Braves at one time were National League. And when teams have moved out of cities and different things, but it's different. I think it's different in baseball, and maybe some of our listeners can leave their comments on that. I think it's different in baseball because baseball, for most of us who follow sports, and even a lot of people who don't because they hear it in their household, baseball is so static. You know, people play for 15 and 20 years. Teams are the teams in the same colors, and we get excited if they change up their uniforms a little bit. But baseball's pretty static, and people like that. I mean, I really believe people like that. They're feel pretty comfortable that a lot of things may change around them, but baseball's going to stay the same. That pitcher, think about it, Joe. How many times has Mariano Rivera walked out on that mound and taken the ball to try to close out a game. I mean, it's like he's been doing it forever. The other day they had a poll and they said, they were ranking the Yankees, the top five Yankees and present-day Yankees, where they fit. And, of course, you look at some of the Yankees that they have, boy, that shortstop. Who's that shortstop for the Yankees, Joe? You're a Yankees fan. Who's the shortstop? Derek Jeter, of course. He's been around forever, right? Great player. They were talking about him. Is he in the top five Yankees of all time? And the list went Ruth, Gehrig, DiMaggio, Mantle. And then there were some questions. Was Jeter next, or was it Yogi Berra, or was it Whitey Ford? And nobody mentioned, at least when I was watching it, and I thought of right away, Mariano Rivera. I mean, how many times in over these years has he walked out there to take the ball to close a game out? He's been phenomenal. Wouldn't you list him somewhere in the top seven, eight Yankees of all time?
Ron Guidry.
Well, you could. You could throw him out there. But, I mean, for a guy like he has he closed another one out. And they say this is going to be his last year. But he has been phenomenal, been consistent, been a guy you could count on. I know he's went through some injuries the last couple years, but for a long, long, long time, he has been a mainstay for the Yankees in that bullpen. And a big, big part of their success, because he's been in the game a lot. You know, he didn't play all nine innings, but he's touched a lot of games and made a difference in whether they've won or they've lost. Is there a team you're looking at as you look at the standings, Joe? Is there a team you're looking at and say, what's happened to these guys?
You know, with the records all bunched up like they are, no, not really. I mean, yeah, the Yankees, you know, they should be 3-0 right now, other than them. And unfortunately, the Boston Red Sox are 2-1. My love for the Boston Red Sox are such that if IU played Boston, I would paint my body cream and crimson and be screaming like a lunatic for the Hoosiers. I can't stand the Boston Red Sox. I can't.
It's a credit to baseball right now. You know, it's such a long season, though, Joe. 162 games, and you can see a team like the Pittsburgh Pirates. What a show they put on for 80% of the year last year. And then they started to falter because they just couldn't hold up. Pitching determines so much. Guys get hot, then they get cold. Some guys are consistent throughout the season, but it's up and down. You look at a team like Los Angeles, both the Dodgers and the Angels, you know, the Dodgers have started out hot. They've got really solid pitching. They've got some good everyday players. But, you know, they've been hot before. They've been hot before. And I know Brian McAtee, who follows us a little bit, he's a big Dodger fan as well as a Kentucky fan. I asked him to call in to talk about Kentucky today, but he probably doesn't want to go on record for his thoughts. But the Dodgers, under Don Mattingly, Indiana, Evansville, Indiana native, great player for the Yankees, the Dodgers are starting out hot. Pitching is solid. The Los Angeles Angels, they went into Cincinnati. I think they got 2 of 3. I'm not sure. It might have been 1 of 3, but 2 of 3. They've got Pujols. They've got Trout. They've got Hamilton. You know, they've got a great team. There's a lot of great teams, great players, but baseball is a long, long season. And Scott Rowland used to say that to me all the time. Coach, it's just such a long season. There's so many ups and downs, and it's so difficult. You have to stay focused and try to stay consistent through it all. Whether you're hot or whether you're cold, you've got to keep a balance. And maybe we can get Scott. You know, I thought Scott would have joined a team, and I know he had some offers, and I guess nothing that he wanted to take, but maybe we'll be able to get him on in the show in a few weeks and talk a little baseball with him. Were you surprised, Joe, that he didn't sign with anybody?
Well, you know, from what I've gathered, he wants to find the right situation. He doesn't want to, you know, I think he's willing to take his time and, you know, maybe take a little toll off his body and not playing the whole season, you know?
Well, I just got a text, and they're asking me about Scott Rolen. Do you think he's retired? Well, I don't know. I don't know if he's going to be retired or not. You know, he hasn't announced he's retiring. I think it's going to take a pretty special offer for him to come and join a team. I'm sure that he's staying in shape. I'm sure that he'll field offers. But, you know, I can't speak for it. He has not said I'm retired. So to our texter, to answer your question, I don't know. I don't know. Until he says I'm announcing my retirement, I think he's still in play. I think it's going to have to be the right situation. I think it's going to have to be a contending team. I think it's going to have to – the money's going to have to be right. I don't know that he's interested in being an everyday player. Selfishly, I want him to be an everyday player, but I don't know if that's his interest at this point in his career. And maybe he'll just spend this year healing his body up and see how he feels next year. And if there's any interest in him, maybe he'll look at it again. I don't know. All of this is conjecture. I have no idea. Yes, we are friends. Yes, we communicate at different times in the year, but I do not know anything more on that. But you've got Major League Baseball, you've got college baseball, and we've also got local high school baseball going, Joe, and I guess Jasper is a pretty solid team again.
Jasper's on a roll. They've got a good mix of, you know, the veteran players, Gilbert and Giesler and Traylor, et cetera, and then they've got a young blend, though. They've got a sophomore named Ben Moore that I've watched come up from a youngster, and he's tearing it up right now too. And you know, they had a big win over Bloomington South the other night, and yeah, things are rolling along for them. And you know, I think Southridge has got a pretty good team, and you know, there are a lot of good teams in the area. And you know, also I also heard that Evansville Memorial coach Merkel, this might be his last season coaching as well.
Yeah, Coach Merkel is going to retire at the end of the year. He'd been on the job for over 40 years, multiple state championships. He was the head baseball coach, high school baseball coach for Don Mattingly. He had those great teams that came through in the late 70s, early 80s. He's had outstanding teams all the way. He is old school. You know, people like to say, well, he's old school. Well, I guess he is old school. He believes in doing things in a disciplined manner. He believes in being accountable. He believes in doing things not just in a disciplined manner, but the right way. He believes in doing the little things. And sometimes that doesn't jive with the mentality of people today. They just want to get out there and play and be done with it. You know, even in every sport, you have kids that just don't want to practice, don't want to do the fundamentals, they just want to play, and it always doesn't work that way. So Coach Merkel's had an astonishing career, 900 plus wins or something like that, and he's earned a rest. He's earned a rest and won a sectional last year, had a really good record, but what happened last year, Joe, I don't know if you remember, they had a player that they found was ineligible due to a transfer rule. He really didn't play a lot of varsity baseball, but he was on the roster, and he did dress and everything, and they had to forfeit a lot of those games. But they overcame that and showed that they were a good team and came out and won their sectional. So this will be his last year. It's a storied career, a storied program in high school baseball in Indiana, in the nation. It's just been a consistent, successful winner, as has Jasper under Don Noblett.
Yep.
And then Ray Howard moved the needle, and then Terry Gober has moved the needle even higher. So we've got good baseball in the state of Indiana and in the southern part of the state as well. And And we've got some solid players. And that doesn't mean they're going to go pro, folks. That doesn't mean they're going to get drafted. But you can go out, you can watch good pitching, fundamental baseball. It doesn't have to be in California. It doesn't have to be in Florida. It doesn't have to be in Texas. We have it right here in the state of Indiana. And Joe knows that well because he's a part of the Jasper community and gets to see a great baseball program every year.
Well, you know, we got a comment from Facebook that they said the 78 state championship team for Evansville Memorial, which included Don Mattingly, was the best team that he's ever seen play in the state of Indiana, and he remembers Jeff King throwing about 104 miles an hour on jugs that day against the semi-state against Jasper.
And I remember big Jeff King, too. I mean, he was huge. He was not only tall at about 6'5 or 6'6 or so, maybe even taller, but he was a big, big guy, and he could throw that ball. And I remember that. Now, Jasper had a great team in the semi-state. I remember Don Mattingly hitting a baseball over the center field area in the scoreboard that just kept going. And they were dominant. And they were dominant the next year, but ended up getting beat in the state championship game, I believe going undefeated up to that point. So they almost put back-to-back undefeated state championship seasons together. They had a great club. They had talent. They had pitching. And I think, Joe, I can't remember. Was it Don Mattingly never struck out one time in his high school career or only one time? It was just a phenomenal.
It was phenomenal. I don't know if it was once or none, but it was, he really did a great job. I mean, watching him play, I'll tell you what, it was, I had a comment from a Facebook user who said he struck out three times. So,
okay, three times. Phenomenal.
Three times, but still.
Over the course of his high school career, that's just phenomenal. It just takes great hand-eye coordination, takes great discipline. And, now he's the manager of the Los Angeles Dodgers, a storied franchise, and he played for a storied one in the New York Yankees. Hey, Joe, Gunnar Kiel, great, at least coming out of high school, one of the top-ranked quarterbacks. He's going to go to Indiana. Then he decides, no, I'm not going to go to Indiana. I'm going to go to LSU. And then he goes to LSU, and he says, no, I'm not going to go to LSU. I'm going to go to Notre Dame. Then Notre Dame ends up having a freshman quarterback, takes him to the national title game, and now he's gone from Notre Dame, and word has it that he is visiting Ball State as a potential next stop for him in his college quarterbacking career odyssey. You just have to wonder, mentally, advice-wise, what's going on here? And I don't know Gunnar Kiel, and I don't know his family. This is just the strangest for a guy who was so highly touted coming out of Columbus East, I believe, in high school, to go from Indiana to LSU to Notre Dame, and now he's visited Cincinnati, I think, and now I hear he's visiting Ball State. What do you make of that?
I think he burbles to Ball State and goes to Purdue. That way he hits all the Division I schools in Indiana. But, no, I don't – actually, I was asked that question. Would we want – we meaning the Boilermakers – would we want Gunnar Kiel? And, physically, Brent must be just an unbelievable talent. I never saw him play. But, his mental – and I don't know if it's him or he's getting bad advice or exactly what, but that's – wow, He's going to be on his fourth school.
I'm just surprised by it all. I don't quite get it. I'd love to sit down with him or his family. I mean, did he just get himself where he didn't really study the situation before he made a commitment, didn't look at who they had recruited, who they were bringing in, what he was comfortable with? Is it a struggle in school? I'm not sure. I'm not sure what it is. And folks, I'm not saying that I know. I'm sure there's a lot of conjecture out there and people wonder, but can you imagine if it was you or if it was your son or if it was your brother and he comes out as one of the most highly rated quarterbacks in the country. Some had him the best quarterback in the country. He was going to go to IU to help turn that program around. He decides to leave IU, something with his brother, go to LSU, decides not to stay there with Les Miles, goes to Notre Dame to help Brian Kelly turn it around. Brian Kelly turns it around with a different freshman quarterback. We talked early in the year, if you remember, Joe, about a quarterback controversy. Is there one at Notre Dame? Obviously, there was, and he opted out. And now we're talking about lower Division I schools that he's going to talk to. Is that where he's going to stay? I don't know. But would a Purdue be interested in a Gunnar Keel?
Well, from what it's a moot point. I think Notre Dame put restrictions on him as far as teams they play. So he couldn't go there anyways. But I don't know, you know. I mean, ask yourself, you got a physical, I mean, specimen. But, you know, do you take a chance on the mental part, you know? I mean, Coach Hazel's trying to build a program, you know, and, you know, we've got – Well, the only problem is you know he's also not going to be able to help immediately. You know, and Purdue's the odds of Purdue starting a freshman quarterback next year are big. You know, and so you've got a situation where you'd also have him then. It'd be quite a log jam, and you know maybe the coaches are going to show a little loyalty. I don't know. And speaking of loyalty, did you read my blog?
I didn't get to it yet. Sorry.
Well, how does six or seven end up being three? I'm still asking the question. You know, I get on different websites and I see how Neil Cody should stay in at IU and et cetera, and I'm still trying to figure out because I've gotten reports, seen reports on the internet where Coach Crean is recruiting the point guard that was going to Northwestern that decommitted, and he's also recruiting a transfer from Tulane. I'm just trying to figure out how you can still be recruiting when you're already going to have to make some tough decisions. And, you know, the thing I hated to read, and I read Pigs, and, you know, Mike's a friend of ours, you know, and I read something the other day that kind of disgusted me where one of the posters on there wrote some really not so nice things about Maurice Creek. And I feel like there needs to be some loyalty to Maurice Creek. He went through what, you know, and he came there when there was nothing. You know, there was no reason to even come to there. And I would hope that he's the sacred cow. It's not nothing's going to happen to in this whole ordeal.
You know, he was a shell of the player, Joe. He was a shell of the player that he was. It was hard at times to watch him play because I think the injuries have taken their toll. And since you're all over IU anyway, let me bring up the end of the Syracuse IU game and the frosty. The frosty, chilling, ice-chilling handshake at the end of the game between Crean and Boeheim. You think that had to do with anything with Patterson that was going to IU and now going to Syracuse? I mean,
well, I don't know
was
because
a...
Coach Crean's known for what everybody except for IU fans call the blow-by handshake. You know? So I'm not sure, you know, but I would think that, you know, but at the same time, though, you know, it's not like Jimmy Boeheim stolen from IU, you know?
No, and you know, Jimmy's not the warmest of guys. So guy that you call Clappy Crean, and now you're calling him the blow-by handshake.
The University of Wisconsin people made that name up, not me.
Okay.
It went from his days.
Okay, but you always
I'm not
say it, so I'd be... That was something that you like to call. Is Kurt Duxell, WBDC sports director, going to join us today? Or is he not going to be able to make it?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I will try to get him on the line. But first, I have a question while I'm trying to call him that someone on Facebook would like for you to answer. And it involves you as a coach. And it says... ask Coach K if he thinks he could coach in today's world with all the scrutiny coaches have on them. You answer that, and I'll be back here in just a little bit with Kurt, okay?
Okay. That's a great question, and absolutely I could and would if the right opportunity came on. We all adjust to what goes on, but the basic parts of the game are still the same. And as for high school, no, I haven't been coaching what you would call a team, but I still work with young men on their game. I still have coached younger kids' teams, and the parts of the game are still the same. You've got to learn how, you've got to learn the skills. You've got to learn the fundamentals. You've got to learn to have passion. You have to learn to play harder than you think you can play. You have to be willing to share the game with the players around you. You have to be a contributor to the on the floor and not just a receiver. You have to be able to add the rest of the game. You got to be able to listen. You have to be able to react. And I think coaches, no matter what day and age we're in, coaches make adjustments. You know, Chris Collins, new coach at Northwestern, longtime assistant at Duke, during the Mike and Mike interview, Greenberg tried to push him in a corner and say something about Coach K and what he thought about what went on at Rutgers. And Chris was very political, and he did not say anything more than Coach K is tough on his players, demanding, but he also knows when to put an arm around them. He tries to get to know them on and off the court. And regardless of what this person says or that person, that's very important, was important to me then and is important to me now, whether I'm working with a high school-aged player or whether I'm coaching 12 sixth graders. We want to get to know who they are, what motivates them, what excites them, where they fit. But the game hasn't changed. Coaches still have to demand. Coaches still have to ask and find ways to get out of the player what they really have inside. And people talk about mental toughness. They talk about heart. They talk about going beyond. That's all part of that. And that takes effort, and that takes a coach or a teacher or a mentor or someone close to you who is willing to put aside the relationship to get you to where you need to be. So I have an iPhone. I take pictures and put them on Instagram. I do Facebook. I do the social media. I know that things have changed. But, you know, whether you're having what I call the bad pass drill back then, where if you didn't get in position and be ready to receive the ball, you might get hit with that ball in your back, on your legs. But that's all discussed ahead of time. That's all discussed ahead of time. We know that's part of the drill. We know that's part of the work. But, you know, I coached in small communities who loved their basketball, and scrutiny and criticism was part of the game. And I don't care what part of society you work in, same thing. If you're working the assembly line making products for Toyota or a factory, you've still got people around you who criticize. You walk out and they say, I bought this car and it's junk. You work in insurance. You work in investments. Market goes down. Oh, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. I'm not making any money. I mean, scrutiny, unfortunately, the world system that we live in, society, is all about being negative. It's not just questioning. It's being negative. So, yeah, it's always tough to coach. Whatever era you coached in is tough. But you have to understand that's just part of it. So Kurt Duxell is going to join us in just a minute, but we're going to go to break first. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
Tomorrow, after the game, I, Jackie Moon, will wrestle a bear.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show for the rant. We're with Kurt Duxell and Coach K Schulteis and myself, and I want to start it out. And I forgot the sound bite I was going to put in here. Should I stay or should I go? You guys know what I'm talking about here?
No.
No? You're IU fans, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, there we go. How are you guys doing today, by the way?
Doing well.
Joe is just never ending on this over-recruiting and keeping and Oladipo staying and Zeller going, whatever it might be. Kurt, I need your support to reel this guy in. He's out of control.
What do you want answers to? I'll be glad to help you, Joe.
I wrote a blog this week that asked, okay, because a lot of people I get on different IU websites and everyone's convinced that Zeller and Oladipo are staying, which I don't highly doubt. And if they would stay, I want to know the formula on how you get down to where you're supposed to be, number-wise.
Well, some of those guys that everybody's all worried about, some of those guys aren't even on scholarship. Do you know for a fact that a guy like Will Sheehy's on a scholarship?
Yeah.
Oh, he is.
if he was, they wouldn't have had to get rid of Patterson last year.
There's several guys out there that are paying their own way on that team.
Somebody's paying
on
their
that
own
team?
Way.
It's the same way you think IU is bad. Kentucky, I mean, there's some of those guys are coming back, and they're bringing like 8 guys in.
Oh,
but
Cal is like
some of these guys, they're not giving scholarships to some of these guys they don't want to give scholarships to that are sitting on their bench. And that's when they end up biting Cal in the Kentucky. They had no depth.
We don't know
the whole situation, whether some of these guys are even on scholarship or how they're going to figure it up. Maybe Will Sheehy, I'm just throwing his name out there. Maybe Hannah Perea is not on a full scholarship. I mean, they can't get away with something if you have to be on a full scholarship.
There's certain sports that are called headcount scholarships. I know this because, thank God,
right,
volleyball
yeah.
is one. So men's basketball is a headcount scholarship.
What if he has them stored up, like Cal Perry?
Well, that's true, but, you know, the thing about Cal is, Joe, you're not talking about Kentucky, and I think people need to. He's got, like, 7 guys, if not 8 guys, coming in. He's the second coming of Adolph Rupp. He's just storing people in the barn. He's just bringing guys in and storing them in the barn. Who's gonna hit or who's going to miss? Hoping some of these other guys go pro, and I got to tell you, I'm not sure any of them should be going pro. Maybe Nerlens if he can recuperate from his injury, but the other guys,
I don't care if it's Indiana, Kentucky. Of all the stuff that's going on, I'm more concerned about how they play at the end of the season. And maybe all of them should go. that's a stupid comment, but that's about as much thought as I put into it.
Well, sometimes you got to say what you feel at the time, and you're just saying it, Kurt. That's what the rant's all about. Doesn't mean that it's out.
Some of this stuff off the court.
I know. I mean, and we got this Final Four coming up, and we've got Wichita State, who shocked everybody. And I know you, Kurt, you have always been a big Missouri Valley supporter as far as the conference being strong and good teams and people not recognizing. After Marty takes U of E to 21 wins and a couple wins over the Shockers, you know, I had to reevaluate a little bit and say, hey, maybe the Missouri Valley was much stronger than I thought it was this year. Maybe U of E was a better team than I thought they were. And, you know, everybody's writing Wichita State off again because they're playing Louisville. But Butler has proven you can get to that final game. I mean, your thoughts on Wichita State?
Oh, they're very good, and they're really tough-minded. Greg Marshall, they got this we play angry kind of theme or whatever, and they got some skilled guys. The thing about Wichita State is just amazing. I think they replaced 4 out of 5 starters and had a couple of guys waiting in the wings. I don't know if they were on scholarship last year or not, but they're pretty good. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility they beat Louisville, and we'll see how much a factor not having Kevin Ware is involved in this whole deal with Louisville, too.
Well, you know, Kurt, and I don't know if you agree or not, the big key for Wichita State is can they handle pressure, defensive pressure, when Louisville, when Patino extends that floor, and he's been running the same press since the 80s. They're good at it. He's got the right personnel to get it done. They swarm you. They create a lot of blind spot passing. And the question is, can Wichita State, Malcolm Armstead, can they handle that onslaught, that consistent wave of pressure that comes out at you throughout the game?
Yeah, and especially if you don't see it. You know as well as I do. And they talked about that with the Syracuse supposed zone. If you don't see it all the time, there's no way to replicate that in practice. And it's amazing. You think you have a pass against Louisville. You think you have a chance to take a ball somewhere on the floor that you think is open. Next thing you know, because they're so well schooled at this press that they've run, as like you said, since the 80s, they're light on you. That passing lane's gone. That dribbling angle's gone. And you're throwing the ball away. And if you're not...
Yeah,
that's what I
talk about, that blind spot passing. All of a sudden, they're rotating from the backside, 40 feet away from you. You have no idea that they're coming. You think you got a guy wide open, and you just don't see the defender, and boom, it's gone. They're down the court, and they're looking to score immediately. They're not looking to just steal the ball. They're looking to score, and that's another part of Patino's press. And people say, well, doesn't everybody? No, not everybody does. Sometimes they're just playing defense or trying to knock the ball away or get a steal, but they work hard on trying to score after the steal. And I think the thing that people forget, and Kurt, you've seen so much basketball and you know it so well, is it's a wave. It just keeps – the tide's coming, it just keeps coming at you. You handle it, then you falter, then you handle it again, then you falter again, then you falter again, then you handle it. And it just keeps wearing on you, and before you know it, they're up 8 or 10 points. And I think that Wichita State physically is tough, disciplined. Yes, they hit the boards hard. All five of their guys hit the boards hard. Now, let me ask you a question. With all the basketball you've seen, all their guys hit the boards hard. Could this end up hurting them if they're not able to get those rebounds or get a hand on it, with Louisville getting out with that ball and nobody from Wichita State getting back?
Oh, I definitely think so, because when the same way with the way they are on defense with that press, it's the same way they go in transition. You're talking about world-class athletes. I've not seen a guy go up and down the floor, especially with the ball in his hand, like Russ Smith. That guy's amazing. The way he can finish, he's not very big, but he finds a way to get the ball in the basket. Siva is unbelievable at handling the basketball. And they turn fast breaks out of just normal rebounding situations. So if Wichita State's going to gamble and go to the boards with everything they've got, they better be prepared to give up some fast break baskets every now and then. And that's what Louisville is. Whether they steal it from you in the press, whether they get it off the board, heck, they even go on makes. So it's a tough thing for Wichita State because again, they haven't seen anybody like that team who's peaking at the right time.
In the other game, you've got Michigan, Syracuse. Syracuse, as I talked about earlier on the show, the great zone defense. And let me clarify, and again, Kurt, you've seen tons of basketball. Just because this zone works doesn't mean that everybody who runs a 2-3 zone, it works the same way. We know that's not the case. The right personnel, physically, mentally, athletically, and they're playing it well at the right time. That's what's going on, plus the fact Boeheim has coached this type of defense for 35 years. So you've got the Syracuse defense. On the other hand, you've got a Michigan team that whatever we think are flaws in their game, they do have five guys, I think, who can score, who can create opportunities to score. Mitch McGarry's gotten better as he's gone on this year. But they've got some guys on the perimeter, definitely, that can create shots. They can reverse that basketball. They can skip it. They can kick it. And all these guys can shoot. And that's going to make that's going to extend that zone out even more than normal. Here's where I think an issue comes in, and you can jump in from here, Kurt, and give me your thoughts, give our listeners your thoughts. Michigan has to get that zone to extend itself in order to get its pick-and-roll penetration-type moves to open up, because otherwise you got these long-arm guys pinching on you, forcing you to pull up with the ball and try to get a pass out through their long arms and over defense where they can't see an opening, and this is where turnovers happen. But if Michigan, because they have the shooters, if they can come out in this game and hit those shots consistently, move the ball, hit those shots, I think personally if they can extend that zone, force it to come out on the shooters on all parts of the court, that's where they have a chance to hurt what has been a flawless defensive scheme so far in the tournament.
Well, I agree, because if they extend that defense against a team like Michigan, I don't think it bothers the Wolverines as much, and I didn't think it was going to bother Indiana. But if you watch the game at a certain part of that game, I wasn't buying the whole zone messed up Indiana. We may talk about that later. But in certain aspects, it did, because Indiana had smaller perimeter guys. But you're talking about Hardaway, 6'6", 6'7". Stauskas, I mean, you watch on TV, you don't know how tall he is. He's 6'6". Burke is a taller type of guy. They may have their way shooting over that zone, especially if it extends. When you bring that zone out, then you can go to that short corner against that zone. You can flash your big man at the top of the, not the top of the key, but in that logo area right below the free throw line like Louisville did in the Big East tournament, something Indiana didn't do. The shooters and the wing that Michigan has a chance to mess up that zone. Again, it's all based on execution from this point, but in theory, I think Michigan has a chance to, like you said, do some things against that vaunted zone.
Yeah, if you're going to attack that elbow in that the elbow area, which you're talking about in the short corner, you got to move that ball. You got to reverse it. You got to skip it. You got to hit some shots to pull the defense out. But you make a good point that probably a lot of people haven't talked about. Michigan's got some big kids out there. They're not little guys, you know, the six-footers, the 5'10s. They're big guys. That's a great point, Kurt, because it does make a difference on how effective that defense can be. I think it looks to be a great matchup. I think Syracuse is playing great basketball right now. I think Michigan is playing what I call, for them, the best team basketball I saw them play this year. I was critical of them early. I'm not going to lie about it. It's critical. I did not think they played like a very good team. I thought they were too individual. I thought they just stretched their shots deeper and deeper out on the court. They easily could have been out of this tournament in the second round, I believe. But they didn't. They've made it through. They're in the Final Four. It looks to be a good matchup. I'm happy for Coach Beilein. I like Coach Beilein. I like that he's been in every level of basketball. He's worked his butt off in all the different divisions and been successful. If you look at both games, let's start with Syracuse, Michigan. In your opinion, and I won't hold you to it as gospel, but as you look at it today, you know, a couple days before or a day before they play, who do you see coming out of the Michigan-Syracuse game?
Well, I like Michigan because I like the way they're playing. But that being said, Syracuse, I mean, evidently they mess with people. You know, I mean, we've seen it, the way they play. But I like Michigan. I just like the way they're going about things. I like their athletes. And I, like you said, I like the way John Beilein is bringing his team on at this right time. And there's, I mean, that's all the difference in the world from a team that's playing their best basketball early to a process in which these coaches, you know, they tell fans to relax, 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 that they know what they're doing. And in this case, he knew what he was doing. They're playing well right now.
And in the other game, you've got Wichita State, the Cinderella, if you want to call them that, just a gutsy team, playing angry, as Coach Marshall said at halftime. I still remember hearing him say that. I just get out there and play angry. I loved hearing that against Louisville, who's got a lot to play for. Obviously, the injury to Ware. He's an Atlanta native. Patino does as good a job as anybody preparing the emotional side of the game as well as the X's and O's. I feel like as much as I'd love to see Wichita State go into the championship game, I just feel like Louisville's just got too much speed and quickness, and they know how to use it. What are your thoughts on that game?
Well, I agree. And the key to Louisville, and Patino was just like Beilein. A lot of the Cardinal fans down here in southern Indiana, you hear a lot from out there. You know, they kind of don't, you know, they don't understand the method that Patino's madness half the time, the way he goes about things during the season. But if you have done it as long as he has, you've got a plan and you want to see it come through at the end. And he's brought this team along, not with just their starting five, but people don't remember he suspended Kevin Ware earlier in the season for, you know, not listening and doing some things that he wasn't supposed to on defense because he's a big stickler on defense. He's brought a guy like Steven Van Treese along to give them valuable minutes in the post to get some of these bigger teams. Van Treese was going to Bellarmine earlier in the summer, and you know, because they didn't want him anymore. And they're bringing Hancock off the bench. If he's hitting the basket, he's one of the best shooters around. Not only they got the starting five, and they got stuff at every position. I mean, you know, Bohannon, Blackshear, Zhang, who's very good. And those two guards, you know, it comes down to being the guards game they talk about. And with Siva, who's making a lot of good decisions, and Russ Smith, I don't see how Wichita State can match up with that. And they could surprise me, but I like Louisville.
Well, it's going to be a great Final Four. I think you've got shooters, you've got athletes, you've got defense, which is going to play an important part in what goes on. You've got some great veteran coaches. Joe, what's our time remaining?
We have got about 10 seconds before the live broadcast goes off.
Did you have a comment or a text or something you wanted to?
Oh, yeah. We have a text. Let me pull it up here. I'm using Reese Milligan's phone today. Hopefully he doesn't get too mad at me. For the rant, this is from Slick Weber, loyal listener to our show. He said, get the coaches off the playing floor and penalize teams after the third or fourth foul in the last minute. Make it three to make two. Comment.
Like it. I like it. Some of this fouling at the end of the game is awful. And some of these coaches on the floor, did you catch the Baylor women's coach? You catch some of her act the other day during that Baylor-Louisville game? Did you talk about somebody
who didn't like to
lose and just couldn't stand that somebody would come in and just dominate their team? She was all over the place, and then she goes off after the game. You know, sometimes, coach, you lose a game every once in a while. And she was just, I mean, gave no credit to Louisville. Her act was really, really wearing thin. But anyway, I agree with you.
I don't have any problem with the coaches working the sideline as long as they stay on the sideline. But they are coming out on the floor way too much, and they are coming past the midpoint of the court way too much. The fouling part, I don't know what to say about that. I do think there's some credibility to the idea that if you're on the other side, if you're on the 10-second side of the court bringing the ball up, and you call a timeout with 3 seconds remaining in those 10 seconds because you can't get the ball up, I believe that you should come back out on the court and get 3 seconds to get the ball up. I do kind of agree with that because I think it penalizes. I know the strategy of it. Believe me, I've done it before. I've used it.
Yeah.
And I would use it again. Call the timeout, start over with the 10-second count. But it does penalize a team that's playing great defense and got you rattled. And that's part of the game where you've practiced, your guys have to go out and get it done on the court. So you may not agree with that, and that's fine. And Slick, you may not agree. But I think when that defense has done its job and you're still at the free throw line on the opposite end and you've gone into the count 6 seconds, 7 seconds, call a timeout. That's fine. But when you come back out, you got 3 seconds after you get it in to get across half court.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's just part of good coaching strategy there on that situation.
Yeah. So, you know, going back to that Baylor-Louisville girls game, I know we don't talk a lot about girls basketball. We probably should more because the game is really, I call it one of the most purest forms of the game when you look at it because they still play below the rim. Louisville did exactly what has been taught, well, at least how I would have approached it, they were, and the officials didn't call it, guys, they were physically bodying Griner whenever she started to make any move across the lane, into the lane, from one end of the floor to the other. I saw parts of the game where a girl would totally, which I don't even know if this is legal, would totally turn around and just run at her, back to the ball, hit her with her chest or her body, and then put the hands up in front of her face to keep her from being able to see the ball. And I mean, you talk about the girls' game actually where I thought one of the few times I've seen them really let them play, I thought the officials just really let them play. Now, before anybody says, well, is that how they beat them? No, I think, didn't Louisville hit like 16 threes that game?
16 threes, yeah, they hit 16 threes. But, you know, it was a great shooting performance. But if you watch the game, I mean, they did. They bracketed her. They bugged out on her from the, you know, the top of the key, anytime that ball would go in there. And, I mean, they put together a great plan, but they did everything that they could to keep Baylor in that game from the official standpoint. And when that couldn't happen, Baylor just lost their mind. I mean, Louisville was hitting those threes, and then the officials would make some questionable calls. They'd let Mulkey go out to half court and yell and whip off her jacket. But there's nothing they could do about it. And Louisville, I mean, not only did they do that, you think they'd be on this hangover type of deal? They'd beat Tennessee like a drum the next time they play.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're just playing at their highest level. It was one of those times opposite of what North Carolina State boys team did. After a big win, North Carolina State boys team would always go and lose the next game. And I heard Mark Gottfried got quite a raise anyway. But Louisville comes back, gets a big win. And for our listeners, if you don't understand what we're talking about, we always taught that when we were outmanned as far as somebody much bigger or stronger, we would try to meet them up around the top of the key and begin to body them and use their momentum to force them out away from the lane. And as they would come across the lane, we would try to meet them before they got started and body them so they had to ride. We rode them, what we call rode their bodies up with their momentum to the free throw line area instead of letting them come right across the middle. So there's a way to defend big people. There really is. If you got girls that'll do it, and you get some backside help in case they try to make the lob or you get some pressure on the ball. But it sure helps when you hit 16 threes. And you brought him up. Yeah, Alford got a big raise. He's going to UCLA. What do you think about that, Kurt?
Well, good for Steve. That's great. Yeah, I was far away from here coaching the better, but congratulations to him. I mean, and his opportunity at UCLA is great for Craig Neal. I'm really happy for him because he's done a lot of work for Alford down through the years. And a lot of people talk about him recruiting both at Iowa and at New Mexico to set them up pretty well. But, you know, Alford signs that extension. The next thing you know, he's on the move. And those players are set back there. They can't leave if they want to. They want to stay now that Craig Neal's the coach. But what do you think about these coaches that move? There's no other business in the world that they can move whenever they want. But then if they get – then they always say, well, they can fire you anytime they want. Yeah, they can, but they have to pay you. College basketball, college football is the greatest thing in the world because these coaches' things are one-sided deals, all in favor of the coach. It's a great life.
I agree, and the money's much better now, and I'm happy for them. And boy, I wish I was in one of those positions. But I do think that the NCAA and Emmert, the head of the NCAA, he's got his own issues all over the place. But I do believe they need to look at giving some of these kids an out option. And this might sound radical, but I'm going to say it anyway. If a coach has a multi-year contract, a kid comes to a school because the coach says, hey, I've got a 10-year contract, I've got an 8-year contract, I've got a 6-year contract. If the coach is using it, and we know that all the coaches, we know this for a fact, that the coaches are saying, we need an extension on my contract so when I'm out there recruiting, these kids know I'm going to be here. So if he's got a multi-year contract and you come to that university expecting him to be there, other than if he would get fired, okay, and he leaves, you can't go with him, but you should have an option to leave. And I know that could get crazy, but maybe we need to settle down. These guys moving out. I'm not against Steve Alford.
No.
Even Steve leaves.
No.
His son's going to follow him. His son averaged 37 points a game in New Mexico high school this year, set an all-time record for points in the state. He was going to come to New Mexico. Craig Neal's son, on the other hand, who also averaged about 27 points a game, 6'5", is a really good player. He's going to St. Mary's. At least he's committed to St. Mary's. Has been recruited by them since he's been in eighth grade. Now he's, you know, do I come to New Mexico and play for my dad? New Mexico did not recruit both of them because they were similar players, and Alford's son was going to be coming to New Mexico. But now his son's going to follow him to UCLA, which is fine. Craig Neal might be coming, son might be coming to New Mexico. But I'm with you, Kurt. You get stuck in a multi-year deal, and then you leave after the net 1 year and you brought these players in. The players ought to have some restitution or some way of at least being able to look back and see if they continue, if they still want to stay.
Well, I agree. Even the guys that have signed a letter of intent, they have not even stepped foot on campus, and they have to jump through hoops to get out of that, too. I mean, that's unbelievable. But I think the school always releases those guys, you know, because of the situation, because the school's no better than anybody, but you go play for the coach. I mean, it's always fuzz and warm that you want to go play for IU or Purdue, but the guys want to play for their coach to recruit them. So, you know, congratulations to the coach Alford. Again, I'm happy for Craig Neal. Anybody that's grown up around here, I know he was your brother's John's age, and, I mean, what a great player. He's kind of toiled as an assistant coach because he was happy with Coach Alford, and, you know, he decided to stay. He could have went other places, but it's neat to kind of be able to follow him now and see how he does in a program like that, because New Mexico is a great place. They play in the Pit, 17,000. It's a one-state, one kind of university state, no pro stuff, great practice facility. You know, you can recruit pretty well, and that's why Alford went there and left Iowa. So I think Craig's got a nice job to start his college coaching career.
That's great. I'm so happy for him because he didn't just jump and run. He got a good opportunity. He was an assistant coach at top-notch programs. I'm sure he was well taken care of. He did a great job. He was an outstanding player in high school and in college. He was a lot of fun to watch. You know, we're into the podcast section, so we can't count on any of our listeners texting us or anything, but Kurt, have you heard anything on Ball State, what direction they might be going? I know that I had talked, you know, so there was some talk about Michael Lewis, would he be interested, but my understanding was they were pretty far down the road with somebody, but no, unless there's been an announcement that I don't know about. Do you know anything on Ball State?
Well, I was reading the paper the other day. They said, you know, everybody threw his Feist name out there, and I think I did even, but he never even talked to him. There was a couple of guys, Nagy from, it's either North Dakota, South Dakota, I don't know. His dad was a longtime coach with Henson over in Illinois. One of those good, successful programs, they went to the tournament. I don't even know which one it was. He was talked about, and also an interesting name, Scotty Davenport, the paper mentioned, from Louisville, was a longtime assistant with Crum, coached at Ballard for all those years, and he's done a great job at Bellarmine. He's a little older, but, you know, they were talking about him being one of the finalists. But, you know, I think it's a nice job. It could be a good job because of the situation. You're right in the middle of Indiana. But, I think after the Final Four, they may get some things straightened out down there. That's a big weekend for coaches, whether you're an assistant trying to find a job or a head coach or whatever, and maybe somebody will emerge after this weekend.
Well, it's a great facility, and it's a strong university, and it seems like, I know they have some recruiting battles and challenges with the state of Indiana and the Ohio area and that, but it looks like it should be a job that someone can come in. And maybe he has to recruit from without this area and bring some people in. But it looks like it could be a very good job. And I'm going to throw this out. This will be controversial for our listeners who join us on the podcast because the show is now over live and this is the extension of the show. But, Kurt, when does a guy like Marty Simmons, who a friend of mine, have great respect for him, you know him, he's obviously come in here and every year has improved this program. He has limitations. I don't care what anybody says. They have limitations. And
yes.
Does a guy like Marty Simmons say, you know, as much as I like U of E and it's been a home for me for many years, when does he look at another opportunity or at least be open to other opportunities? We know he can coach, and we know if he assembles a good staff, he'll recruit. I just think that he's got a bigger upside somewhere else. I could be wrong, but I think he does.
Oh, I agree. I love Marty. I mean, we have an opportunity to talk to him a lot, and you've been close to him. And it seems like he is just spinning his wheels. And you know, maybe, and I don't know this, and I'm not saying this is the case. I'm just throwing this out there. Maybe he can't do anymore. Maybe some of it is the way they put together their game plan or the way they go about their program. Maybe U of E's not enamored with the way they're doing it. Maybe it'll be a mutual type of deal. But, you know, I think Marty would have a lot of different opportunities. I mean, if he sends his resume to Ball State, they'd have to think long and hard about hiring somebody like that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he can do some things. I mean, I just wish, for his sake, for everybody's sake, I wish they were better. You know, because, I mean, when they got it rolling down there, it's fun. And
yeah.
And it just doesn't seem like there's, you know, the buzz around there, whether it's, you know, because of the school, what they're doing. I mean, they got a brand new arena, brand new practice facility. But, you know, like you said, there's some limitations on how they can recruit. You know, and you've had family that went there, and I'm familiar with it. You know, for a kid that comes in there, it's not really a big-time campus. There's not a lot of social opportunities. And that does play a part in who you can bring in or who wants to go there. So, I mean, you pose an interesting question, and I'm sure you can ask Marty this in private or whatever. Would you ever entertain the thought of going somewhere else? Or do you just ride it out and hopefully, you know, it gets turned around? But, I mean, I'm a big Marty Simmons fan. I just hope that they get better. But, you know, every year it's almost you can mark it down 15-15. And this year they played well in that postseason deal. But they lose some guys like Cole Ryan, who spent 4 years from there. And they didn't do a lot. So I hope it works out. I mean, and like I said, this is no – I'm not hanging Marty Simmons to the wall or anything because I love Marty Simmons. For as a U of E fan, I just, you know, wish it would be better for them and for the, you know, university as a whole.
Exactly. I mean, I'm saying this because I think Marty Simmons does a great job, and I think it's probably not realized because of the limitations that the university, that the Aces have. And I don't know anything specific, but I know that all the things you said, all the reasons why it could be difficult – is why. And I think that a lot of times when you look at success, when you look at how you're going to be successful, what success you can have and how you can be successful, you also have to look at the obstacles that stand in your way of being successful.
Mm-hmm.
As players, as coaches, as a university, as a business, whatever it might be, you may have some obstacles. Even though you can do the job and you do a great job, there may be some obstacles there that make it difficult for you to perpetuate it going forward. I look at Jim Cruz. I think Jim Cruz is a heck of a coach. I don't know if he's the life of the party. I have no idea. I mean, he's a very conservative guy. He's down to earth. He's not gonna be a guy who jumps on TV and holds press conferences. He did a great job. Him and his staff did a great job at U of E. After a while, a lot of his assistants left because they couldn't make what I call a decent living at the time with what they were able to pay the assistant coaches. They went on
right.
High school jobs and different things like that. Marty came in. He eventually left. It just, you know, I think there comes a ceiling time unless the program advances. And, Kurt, one thing I've heard about, you know, Butler, Brad Stevens, and different universities where you'll see a coach decides to stay, and he's already making good money, but he's had meetings, he got a small raise, but in that, when he signed that contract for the extension, he also got an increased budget for basketball. They're going to take more charter flights than bus rides. They're going to, assistants are going to be paid a little bit more, which is going to entice them to stay or bring in somebody else. The program is going to be a little more high profile in how it's treated, how the players are treated. Now, I'm not talking about Kentucky level, but the coach goes in and he negotiates an extension, says, I will stay, but we need to do this, this, and this, and the university is able to do that. I don't know if University of Evansville is able to do that. I know they're working hard on some building programs and new dorm, on-campus dormitories, but they still play at the Ford Center, and it's downtown. You know, they do have a new practice facility, and it's nice, but, you know, DePaul went through this. DePaul out of Chicago went through this when they played off campus. When they were hot, the people came. Once they weren't, the people quit coming, and the kids quit coming. And I just wonder if there's a ceiling, and it's too difficult to overcome. Well, just my thoughts on that. Real quickly, before we end the show, there's two things. One, I want to know what you've got going on. But first, Butler. They move into this Big East Conference. I've posed this question during our Hoops Sweet 16 special, where we did some special shows during the weekend. Ken Butler, is this a time that Brad Stevens might have looked at leaving? Can Butler sustain their run in this new conference? Will they be able to recruit the type of players they need year in and year out to play? Now, it's not the Atlantic 10. It's better than the Atlantic 10, and they're only in the Atlantic 10 one year. Can they sustain their momentum? Will they be able to recruit enough good players to be a consistent contender in this new Big East Conference?
Well, and that's a big question. Hinges on some of the factors that you talked about earlier. When they went to the A-10, they did get the bump in assistant pay. They did do the charter flights. They did do the rent. They're going to renovate Hinkle Fieldhouse. But in the latest report, when they analyzed all these other teams, the Marquettes, the rest of those teams from the old Big East, Butler is the bottom of all that category, assistant coach pay. Stevens isn't making hardly what those other guys are making. They're going to have to even make a bigger commitment to doing things, quote-unquote, right. As far as, you know, they're not the little engine that could in this conference. They're a big boy in this conference, or they're going to have to be. And some of that, you know, little underdog, little Butler is going to have to go out the window if they're going to be successful like you're talking about. I think they can recruit because they kind of recruit to a system, kind of like Syracuse. They're recruiting all those guys with those big, long arms that can play that zone. And I think Butler's got a system like that. But does that system translate? Can you get enough mileage out of that to compete year in, year out in a league like that? Or do you have to go out and take a chance on, you know, a knucklehead or somebody that you can't, you know, that you're going to have to hopefully they'll fit into your system? Where is that line? That was the thing about Stevens. It was always, you know, he can recruit the guys he wants. He doesn't have to get in that cesspool of, you know, going into Chicago or going into New York or L.A. and trying to, you know, get somebody to come in and, you know, he was comfortable and he was able to win getting system guys. But, you know, how close to that line are they going to have to get? And that, I mean, that's a great question. Because I like Butler and I like all those guys and those guys know what they're doing and Stevens is fantastic. I've got the same question.
It will remain to be seen. Of course, one of their top assistants, Matt Graves, a guy from our area, Switz City, White River Valley, a Butler player. He's taken the job at South Alabama. Hopes to a program that's not been terrible, but has not been contending for NCAA berths in recent years. I wish him so much luck. He's just one of the good guys in coaching, and he's always been rated as a high high assistant. And I know you always talked about Kurt. You know, when we bring up other names, you'd say, well, what about Matt Graves at Butler? He's got his opportunity.
Well, that's great for Matt. He's kind of like Craig Neal. He stuck with whoever was at Butler, and because he played there, and he was so ingrained in that place, and it was great for Matt. You know, a lot of these other situations come up, and it's got to be a right fit, and he must have figured out that this was the right fit. As you said, they've been good down through the years, with South Alabama. So this must be a place that he thinks he can get it done at. And so, and what's so great about it, I love this time of year with these coaches moving, and, you know, because it creates opportunity for guys.
You know,
just him going there is going to help Michael Lewis move up on Butler's staff. And with that means, you know, the financial deal and also the profile to go out and be the lead recruiter or be the associate head coach. And that's how this, you know, these coaches that start out, you know, being the grad assistant or the video coordinator, all this creates opportunity. Sometimes we focus on, you know, Steve Offer getting the big-time job or Brad Stevens or Shaka Smart, but some of those lower guys, it helps them a great deal, and that's what's cool about all this.
Yeah, and you know, those guys, they are the Shaka Smarts of years ago, several years ago. And they're the guys that bring in good players, and they're the guys that help build programs. And you're right. It feeds that tube and allows guys to move up. And I believe that Michael Lewis, of course, we know him well. I think he's really matured as a coach, and he's, I think Butler has been a great experience for him. And I think that he is well on his way to stepping in the role as a head coach someday. He presents himself well. He speaks well. He understands the game. He's been in difficult situations as a player, as a coach. He's tasted success. He's been around some great coaches, played under Coach Knight, regardless of what you think of him. He's a great coach. He's coached with Brad Stevens. He's done a really good job. So we look forward to hearing his name down the line. Now let's get to you, Kurt, a guy that everybody wants to know. What's going on with you? We're moving into baseball season. I'm sure you got to get out there and get on the diamond and talk baseball.
Yeah, I do the Jasper games on WJTS 18. The Wildcats are 4-0. They've been tested just once, a 5-3 win up at Bloomington South. They're a really good program, and Jasper able to beat them. They had three blowouts, including a 24-0. Ball game the other day against Mount Carmel, and I've been around this earth 45 years, and to say that was one of the biggest waste of times would be a severe understatement, because that was a horrible day of baseball. But Jasper's got a really good team this year, and they've got really good pitching. Mark Eisler, he's going off to University of Dayton. Nick Gilbert's a Division I type of baseball player. They've got some, you know, good defenders, and they play Memorial tomorrow, so looking forward to that. And it'll be kind of weird. It'll be Quentin Merkel's last trip to Rooksor Field. He's stepping down. You know, familiar with this situation. He's been coaching there for 45 years, and they've had some great battles with Jasper down through the years. And I think they've got some things planned for Coach Merkel, which is really cool because, you know, being the Jasper Memorial rivalry, it's always been heated, whether it be, you know, hoops, football, you know, anything. But you're there for 45 years, so that's coming up tomorrow. So baseball season should be really good. There's other good teams around the area as well, and if we can just get this weather to break. I mean, it's absolutely miserable to be outside in this stuff.
Yeah, we had a great afternoon today, and I know when we finish the show here in a little bit, I'm probably going to put on the sneakers and head out and do some jogging today and enjoy this. Yes, folks. I do get out and jog, absolutely. But baseball season is going to be in full swing, and as we go forward with our shows, we're going to be talking Major League Baseball. We're going to be talking college baseball. We're going to be talking high school baseball, and Kurt Guksel is a major part of that for us, and we love his contribution. He's an avid baseball guy. So, Kurt, we look forward to talking with you, not just ranting, but getting the upside and the downside on the different teams on all the different levels. And who knows, maybe Scott Rowland will join us on a show if he doesn't come back out this year, but we'll have to see. I I don't know if you think there's a possibility of him still joining the team or not. Thoughts as we end the show?
The longer it goes on, I don't anticipate him joining a team, but you never know. I mean, I know that you feel the same way, or I think you probably feel the same way. It was just weird, you know, not, you know, turning on the TV or checking the box score for the first time in 17, 18, or how many years it was. You know, I've gone to opening day the last few years, and, you know, kind of was just, you know, kind of numb, you know, and Mitch Stetter from Southridge was the last guy, you know, cut in the Angels camp. He nearly made the Angels as a specialist out of the bullpen, but it was just weird not, you know, having Scott Rolen a part of a major league roster. And I know it's kind of selfish to talk about that, you know, but that's how I felt, and I'm sure you felt the same way.
Oh, I felt exactly the same way. I mean, I my family knows this, and I've told Scott before. I mean, you're not any different than me, or are literally tens of thousands of people out there, and the millions of baseball fans who connect with a team or a player. I mean, I would get excited about opening day because I knew Scott Rolen was going to play or possibly play later on as the injuries mounted. It was harder, but it got me excited. And I've told him before, and I truly believe this, Kurt. I know you could share this. When you have a connection with a player or a team, and this is for the millions of people out there, when you wake up the next day or go to bed that night and you found out your team won or that player played well or did something special, it just makes your day go a little bit better. It gets you excited about it. You just feel better about things. And I know some people listening might say, I really never thought about that. But think about it. When your team wins or the player you like wins or you hear he had two home runs or hit the game-winning RBI or scored the big basket at the end of the game, it just puts a little spring in your step, makes you rest a little bit easier, and in a what can be a tough world sometimes, it just makes it go a little bit smoother.
Well, I agree, and I know you'll feel the same way because you're in athletics and you understand the scope of a Scott Rolen or a Matt Mock or a Mitch Stetter or a Ken Dilger. Not in your wildest dreams, and I would think, Kenny, even you or Terry or anybody would ever think that one of your guys or somebody that I called would be a Major League Baseball player. You all, you know, your dad, your mom took you to games when you were younger. Did you ever think that you would know a major leaguer or an NFL quarterback? Or that's what's made it so special. And, you know, there's nobody that called that he was going to be a major leaguer. We all knew that a guy like Scott Rolen was very good. But to say that you knew he was going to be in the major leagues is unbelievable falsehood because it's so hard to get there. And just to know that you never thought you'd see a guy like that, or Michael Lewis being a big-time basketball player in college. I mean, if that's what made it special to finally, you know, be able to say one of your guys or somebody that you know was there, and that's what made it so special all those years that those guys have played.
Oh, Kurt, you hit it right on the head. It's like Wichita State poop. I said in the special, I said, come on, let me know if you really thought Wichita State would be in the Final Four. I mean, you just don't, you know they're good, or you know that this team's on a run, or you know this player's a good player and he's better than most players you've seen, but you don't ever think somebody's going to go into what is potentially an all-star career in baseball. As many years as he played, as long as my kids have been alive, he's been playing on the major league level, and that's phenomenal. And like you said, Michael, and so many other of the young players that I had coaching, I've been blessed in my whole life. I'm blessed, but the time I coached, I was very blessed. Blessed with the people I met, the situations I've been in, the different coaches I got to work with. When I look back today, I say, my gosh, how, you know, Patino, all these guys I've met on the camp trails, sat down and talked with, saw them as assistant coaches, working their way up. Just been very blessed with it, Kurt. I know you in your announcing radio and even some of the TV, you've just been able to meet good people, connected with other good people. And, you know, I am selfish, too. I would love to hear tomorrow Scott Rowland signed with somebody. I just love to hear it. Even if he only can only give me 50 games, there's 50 games that I'd love to wake up and see how he did. Kurt,
yeah,
wonderful to have you again. I don't know if we'll solve all the ills of the world. Hopefully the Rutgers situation will settle itself down and we can get on with the good things about sports and coaching and playing and just have a lot of fun at the Final Four. For our listeners to the podcast, we will have some special Final Four shows. I'm thinking we're probably going to go somewhere for an hour before the Final Four starts and talk about the Final Four games on Saturday and get ready for a great evening of basketball. We'll work that out with Joe, and then we'll publicize that on the Coach K and Joe Show Final Four special. Hope to have time talking hoops on Saturday, Sunday, and even Monday. So stay tuned for emails and tweets and Facebook messages and anything else. And if you're not happy with something you heard today, feel free to text us. You can text Coach K anytime you want at 812-480-9449. I don't bite. Don't worry. If you got a comment, question, I'll read it. I'm not like ESPN. We will read your text and your tweet, and we will let people know you're on. Kurt, thanks a lot for being on the show again, buddy.
No problem. If you need me this weekend or anytime, feel free to call. It'd be great.
Yeah, we will. And don't forget, a listener, an avid listener of our show, Joe, Jeff Cochran is in at his, I believe, 23rd straight Final Four.
Yeah, I think he wants to call in and give his little bit about his experience as well down there. So kind of give us a bird's eye view of what's going on in Atlanta.
Yeah, we might try to touch base with Jeff and pull him in on one of our special shows this weekend and just find, because you know him. Goof is out there and he's talking to any player, coach, anybody he can find up. And he's built a lot of good relationships down there because he's gone for so many years in a row. So maybe next year we'll be at the Final Four, Joe, for the Coach K and Joe Show.
Maybe. We'll just have to see what the budget allows.
All right, well, we're going to say goodbye for the weekend. Joe, you take us home. You've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Guys, and we'd like to thank all our listeners for listening to us live or on the podcast, and stay tuned to Facebook and Twitter about news on the times of our shows this weekend, and you've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. Join us next Friday from 11 to 1 for the next show. Until then, visit www.jaspertodayonline.com or go to iTunes to listen to podcasts of past shows. See you next week.